Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the September 2nd, 2014 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. I'd point out that there are emergency exits, which are stairwells, to in the back of the room to my right and in the front of the room to my left. Please silence your cell phones and any electronic devices. Last time we had a public hearing, we decided to open the meeting first to try that for a while. So I'd like to do that tonight and ask folks to please stand with me for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Let's have the roll call of members, please.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Robison will be arriving later this evening. Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
13 members present.
We have a quorum. First order tonight will be a public hearing. A public hearing will be held by the Tompkins County Legislature at 5:30 p.m. in the legislature chambers concerning proposed local law number E, amending local law number 3 of 2003, a local law amending Chapter 72 of the Tompkins County Code to restrict smoking in places of employment, restaurants, and taverns. And we would open that up for those folks who might like to address us with respect to the public hearing tonight. I have one person that signed up. You don't need to sign up to address us on the public hearing. Ted Shealy, please speak to us.
Thank you, Chairman Lane, Chairman Stein, and legislators. Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Ted Shealy, and I come to you today as a resident of the town of Groton, a constituent of legislator Brian Robison. I am here to speak in favor of the proposed amendment to Chapter 72 that will add e-cigarettes and other electronic nicotine delivery systems, or ENDS, to the array of smoking materials currently prohibited for use at places of employment or food service establishments. There is a difference of opinion as to whether or not e-cigarettes and ENDS are safe for the user and safe for those in proximity to the user. I don't believe that should be the question. Instead, because Chapter 72 is concerned with the impact on employees in a place of employment, the question should not be one of is it safe or safer, but rather is there risk. I believe the evidence points to the health and safety risk for those in proximity to an end user. In support of that view, I'd like to read selected passages from testimony to the New York State Senate Health Committee given last May by Andrew Hyland, Ph.D., who is chair of the Department of Health Behavior at the Roswell Park Cancer Institute. And I quote a few just passages. There is reason to be very concerned about potential unintended consequences of electronic cigarettes and their marketing. The big question is whether e-cigarettes pose a health risk. The answer is an unequivocal yes. While overall e-cigarettes appear to be less harmful than conventional cigarettes, they are not safe. Exposure to secondhand vapor is also a concern, and work in our labs has shown that e-cigarettes are not emission-free. Just because it's a smaller amount of poison that is observed than that observed for cigarettes doesn't mean secondhand vapor is safe. And finally, Roswell Park studies found evidence of third-hand smoke deposited as nicotine residue on indoor surfaces. And I have copies of Dr. Hyland's complete remarks if the chair would like them for the record. One other comment I'd like to make. I pulled up the minutes from the legislature's meeting of August 5, 2003. At that regular meeting, there was a public hearing and vote on Local Law Number 3 of 2003, the law for which you are considering an amendment today. At that time, there were questions about whether or not this local law was necessary in light of the recently implemented State Clean and Air Act. The opportunity being considered today is clear and brilliant proof of the value in passing that law in 2003. Workers were at risk, and the county decided that local protection was a necessary hedge against an unpredictable state legislature. Now, with respect to e-cigarettes and ENDS, without the foundation of our local law passed in 2003, we would still be waiting for the state to act on our behalf. Instead, you have the means of taking a proactive stand for the health and safety of those who call Tompkins County their place of employment. Thank you.
Thank you, Ted. And if you'd like to hand that document in, we'd be glad to have it as part of the record. Anyone else like to speak on the public hearing? Please step to the microphone and tell us your name and where you're from.
Hi, I'm Samantha Hilson, and I'm a resident of the city of Ithaca. And I'm here.
We can't quite hear you.
Oh, sorry.
Can you tip that down a little bit?
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Can you start again, please?
Samantha Hilson, and I'm a resident of the city.
That's much better.
Okay. I'm here in support of the proposed amendment to Chapter 72. Last year, the CDC reported that thousands of high school students in the U.S. who would have never tried traditional cigarettes because of the known dangers have now experimented with electronic nicotine delivery systems such as e-cigarettes. The unregulated advertising for these products is seductive, sophisticated, and celebrity-endorsed. The marketing messages suggest that these products are safer for your health and allow people to evade the historic smoking bans that have defined much of the last decade. E-cigarette cartridges contain liquid nicotine, flavoring, and other chemicals, including some carcinogens. E-cigarette products mimic the ritual of using conventional cigarettes. Tobacco programs all over the country and New York have worked diligently to denormalize tobacco use in public spaces for public health, but the use of e-cigarettes in indoor spaces that are designated smoke-free may be confusing to youth and reverses the efforts of tobacco control. I urge the legislature to include electronic nicotine delivery systems in the county law in an effort to protect youth, employees, and individuals who have existing respiratory issues. Thank you.
We may have a couple other blue cards here on this issue. Benza Anna Rose Blank. Blayek, if I've
Hello there. Wrong. My name is Bonzi Ann Rose Blake. That's spelled B-L-A-Y-K of 1668 Trumansburg Road, Ithaca, New York. It's up in the town of Ulysses. It's also, I don't work at Tompkins County. I work at DataBeast Incorporated, which is my own S corporation. I founded it in 1994 in order to license and distribute and further develop software that I developed for Cornell called Comet, the Cornell Macintosh Terminal Emulator. Now, I vape. And I vape a lot. I used to smoke a lot, but I don't anymore. Now, the crucial issue, the hinge point here, in 2003, I think the legislature wisely took the move of regulating tobacco use in public places because it's really a health hazard. It's smoke, it's fire, and it has a lot of particulates and carcinogenic materials in the combustible matter. Now, in 2003, this measure was justified by this. This legislature finds that primary tobacco use is a major cause of mortality and morbidity, directly causing an estimated 434,000 deaths per year in the United States, more deaths than are caused by the use of any other legal or illegal substance or drug. That's a lot of death. This causes zero deaths. You might cause some minor illnesses. Somebody with COPD might have a problem, and somebody might have a panic attack, all of which can be dealt with in an appropriate manner by being polite and requesting that people stop use, cease use, if someone, and this will be rare, is actually having an issue with it. But moreover, I vape. This is not smoking. This is a vaporizing device. There is no smoke in it in my place of business. So I'm supposed to be fined $1,000 a day, $365,000 a year for taking care of my own health, which is recommended to me by two different psychologists. My personal physician is fine with me vaping in his examination room. Not a problem. He's very health consciously. He continually urged me to cease smoking tobacco, and I have. Now I have a 3-octave range. I didn't used to when I was smoking tobacco. So at any rate, I urge you to reject this legislation. It's unnecessarily broad in position, and the fines are outrageous, particularly considering we're comparing 434,000 deaths per year, and I've given up smoking tobacco versus zero and some anxiety and perhaps, you know, minor harms to people who have some very severe health problems. And that should be dealt with individually or by the business concerned. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Have Seth Gregory.
First off, I'd like to say that I smoked for 20 years and was up to 2 packs a day by the time I quit a year ago. I quit by switching to e-cigarettes. Beyond that, I have several packets here, if anyone would like to review them. Pretty in-depth research on secondhand vapor. But I have one highlighted paragraph that pretty much sums it up. I'm not going to go through all this in the 3 minutes that I have. So, by reviewing over 9,000 observations about the chemistry of vapor and the liquid in e-cigarettes, Dr. Burstyn was able to determine that the levels of contaminants e-cigarette users are exposed to are insignificant, far below levels that would pose any health risk. Additionally, there is no health risk to bystanders. Proposals to ban e-cigarettes in places where smoking is banned have been based on concern that there is potential risk to bystanders, but the study shows there is no concern. So this is kind of a summary of research that was done by Drexel University in 2013. I have the full study, peer-reviewed, right here in this packet, if anyone would like to look over these. Also, I have a legislative packet put out by CASA. It's a concerned. Sorry, I'm not a very good public speaker.
You're doing fine. Thanks.
Consumer Advocates for Smoke-Free Alternatives Association. This is a little more broad on, you know, as far as the studies go, you know, what, you know, the effects it has on personal users, not so much, you know, just specifically secondhand vapor. But it's still a good read. So that is all.
Thank you. If there's anything you'd like to hand up for the record, we'll be glad to receive it. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on the public hearing? Not seeing anyone else, so we'll close the public hearing now and resume our regular agenda. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I don't think we have an executive session tonight, do we, Steve or Joe? Okay. I may be reordering business as we go along. We've got a lot of staff here tonight, and we're going to try not to keep them until wee hours of the morning if we can avoid that. So, let's go to privilege of the floor for the public. This is the public's opportunity to speak to us for up to 3 minutes, and they are our guests. And we do ask them to sign the blue cards if they want to speak. And when they sign the blue cards, they're promising as follows. The person is agreeing to a three-minute time limit, and we have a countdown clock and a bell that will indicate when the time is up. You agree not to raise your voice, agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. Agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor, and you agree that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you'll leave the chambers. So thank you for that. And I have one blue card tonight, and it's John Bosick. Or Bosick, I don't know which.
Bosack, it's a hard
Bosack.
One.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, my name is John Bozak. I'm a resident of the town of Ithaca, and I'm a member of the County Broadband Committee. I have to leave shortly for a meeting of the town of Ithaca Planning Board, of which I am also a member, so I won't be here when you consider the adoption of a resolution relating to net neutrality later this evening. I'd like instead to read you this statement with the understanding that I'm speaking only for myself and I'm not as a representative of the committee. Over the past several years, your broadband committee has labored to enable the provision of broadband access to all areas of the county. A key objective of this effort has been to enable the development of local web-based businesses in our rural towns in recognition of the fact that much of the business opportunity we expect the future to provide for our highly educated population will lie in the area of business conducted over the Internet. Rules recently proposed by the FCC will allow Internet service providers to charge their business partners less than what they charge our small businesses for the same level of service, as long as doing so is judged to be, quote, commercially reasonable, unquote. Since the companies involved wouldn't be pursuing such agreements unless they did find them to be commercially reasonable, this policy is not likely to stop them from trying. Let me be perfectly clear about this. Any agreement between an Internet service provider and a strategic business partner that provides a better deal to that partner than what our local businesses are charged for the same level of service puts our local businesses at a direct competitive disadvantage, whether that deal is judged to be commercially reasonable or not. And the proposed FCC rules state that it is their explicit purpose to enable such special deals to be made. According to the text of the rules themselves, this is why the FCC is proposing them. In my opinion, there is no way that the implementation of these proposed rules can work to anything but the disadvantage of our local businesses, both now and increasingly so as we head into the future. I therefore urge the legislature to approve the resolution that will be before you later this evening and send a clear message to the FCC that it cannot put our local economy at a competitive disadvantage by allowing sweetheart deals between Internet service providers and their preferred customers. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bosick.
I don't have any other blue cards, so we'll move on now to privilege of the floor. Am I seeing any municipal officials? I don't think so. So we'll turn to our legislators for privilege of the floor. Anybody want to speak, or can we move on? Carol Chalk.
Hi, Mike. Thank you. I have two items. I just want quickly, I don't have details, a lot of details to give people, but for people who haven't noticed or gotten this information from other sources, there is the UN, the United Nations, is looking at the issue of climate change. They're having some kind of a conference, and in concert with that, people from around the United States and elsewhere are going to be in New York City the weekend of September 19th to 21st. 20th and 21st would be the Saturday and Sunday, with, I believe, the big march in front of the UN related to climate change is on the Sunday, but activities all weekend by a whole variety of groups and interests that are taking part. So people who are interested, I think there are three different buses that I know of going from Ithaca. There'll be other events around the world, but those who are following this issue, it isn't a U.S. issue. We all talk about the fact that what good does it do for us to address this if other places around the world don't. So it is something that's very important to let our views be known. And then locally, I just wanted to point out, and I had some more information put in packets for legislators. Jan Rhodes Norman asked me to announce something tonight. She is from an organization called Local First in Ithaca, that a group of business people who are proponents of how good it is for our economy for people to understand the impact of local buying. But they are bringing in a speaker named Bruce. It's either Seifer or Cipher. I can't remember. Seifer. He'll be at Cinemopolis on Thursday, September 4th from 4 to 6 p.m. If you miss him there, he'll be at Cornell at noon on Friday. And he's speaking on the topic, what is a durable economy? How is it created, and what does it take to sustain over time? He's got a book out called Sustainable Communities, Creating a Durable Local Economy. While he's known in particular for having turned around the economy in Burlington, Vermont, he did that, I think, as a consultant. He has experience in the economic development field for over 40 years, and he's been a consultant to a widespread variety of sizes, shapes, backgrounds of the economies that he's helping to address. So this isn't just something, you know, what can we do in Ithaca, New York? It's I urge Jan and maybe through TCOG to send this out to, Lansing and Groton and Trumansburg, Newfield, any sized economy, in particular centralized economies, but in addition, I assume he has ideas for those of us who are looking regionally as well. So I urge people to look at this event and think about going. I think they're trying to set up an opportunity to speak to him after that 4 to 6 p.m. at Cinemopolis this Thursday as well.
Anyone else? Dave McKenna.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'd like to remind everybody of Newfield Old Home Days on the 12th and 13th of September. That's Friday and Saturday. There'll be live music on Friday night, a chicken barbecue, a parade at 11 on Saturday, and live music the rest of the afternoon, fireworks in the evening. Everybody come out and enjoy themselves. Thank you.
I should ask our administrator and Marcia, are we having a presence in the parade over there?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I would hope that a lot of us would turn out then and support the Newfield celebration over there. Anyone else? Peter Stein.
I too have something, an event that I would like to tell you about. My knowledge of this event comes from the fact that I'm chairman of the HHS committee, which has got a lot of things that are very interesting. There's a lot of people that report to that, and in the course of doing this, I have sat at a lot of different meetings and gained a tremendous amount of knowledge about parts of our county which I otherwise would not have known anything about. One of the organizations that I sit on their board, because of the fact that I'm chair of that committee, is the Alcohol and Drug Council of Tompkins County. This is an organization whose mission is to drive down the alcohol and drug abuse in the county. Obviously, it would be very difficult to drive it down to zero, but the more you do, the more you drive it down. And for those of us who have been talking about the jail, you know, one thing about the jail is that most people in the jail are there because of having something to do with either alcohol or addictive drugs. And if we could drive that out, I think there would be no problem about empty seats in the jail, empty rooms in the jail. So anyway, this particular event intrigued me, so I thought I would tell you about it. I have flyers, which I will pass around. This takes place on Greek Peak, September the 14th, and it is a competition which I really fully do not understand. I heard it explained, but I'm not quite sure I got it. But it's like a race. It's like one of those 4K things when people go 4K and they run around, there's a winner. But this one seems to be, the chief feature of it seems to be that they run around in the mud. And I'm told it's very popular. And that when you go there, you'll really be amused by all of the mud-soaked people who are trying their best to win this race. There will be, of course, a contribution to be made to observe this process, and frankly, I can't wait. So it's September the 14th, which is a Sunday at some ungodly hour in the morning, I think 9 o'clock. And I, from what I heard, I would recommend that you all go there. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Anyone else? Martha Robertson, then Will Burbank.
Yes, one event yesterday and then two this weekend. Actually, Mike, are you? I'm trying to find is the Freeville Fair this Saturday?
I think so.
Okay, usually it's
the same day as the Ellis Hollow Fair.
Yes.
I'm not 100% sure. I don't want to be wrong. But
if you have nothing to do Saturday, come to Dryden, then you can go to Ellis Hollow and you can go to Freeville and get, you know, a lot of different kinds of things for families to do. And yesterday was Labor Day, and I just want a very brief comment on a column that I saw that said something about Labor Day. It's about labor, but not about unions. I would point out that we enjoy a lot of things. You know, the workforce in general, even non-unionized workers, enjoy many, many benefits that they've only won because unions have been there fighting for the five-day work week, against child labor laws, for 40-hour work week, et cetera. So labor encompasses more than just unionized labor, but I think everyone who works for a living probably has a debt owed to labor unions who fought those fights over the year. Just a general comment.
Will?
I was intrigued by Peter's mention of this mud event out at Great Peak, and I recently read an article, I think it was in the Ithaca Voice, that Cornell University used to, in the early 20s, have a tradition called Mud Day. And literally they soaked up a field and whole classes came out and got filthy dirty. And for some reason they stopped it, but it has apparently started again. And, Peter, I would encourage you to go and participate.
Which one, the Greek Peak? Or
yes.
And I urge you to go.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Leslie Beaton Claiborne.
Just a quick reminder to folks that this weekend it's Streets Alive on the Ithaca's city south side on Wood and Plain Street, I think it is, on Sunday. It's usually on a Sunday. The streets are closed off. We're encouraging neighbors and friends and visitors to the area to come on down, bring your bicycles, walk, and just enjoy getting to know each other and participating in the activities on the streets. So look forward to seeing you all at Streets Alive on Sunday at our Southside neighborhood.
Are we done? Okay, thank you. For my report, I would just mention that the Tompkins County Council of Governments has been urging the governor's office and the state legislature, and so have we, to please, we've got a resolution on tonight, to please extend the look-back period for the qualification of our county for various kinds of consolidation efforts in 2015 or 16, I forgot which.
For the 2016 budget.
All right, for the 2016 budget, back beyond what is being discussed, which is what, 2011 or something like that? 2012, that's even worse. We got a letter back from the director of the budget, Robert Megna, and I just thought I would indicate his response to the request of the letter I sent, saying we ought to move that back, so we could take advantage of some of the things that we have done carefully in our local Tompkins County, including, for example, the health benefits consortium that we've had. He writes back, the look-back period for the tax freeze credit is tied to the beginning of the tax cap, when many local governments felt pressure to make significant spending reductions in order to maintain levies in accordance with the property tax cap. There are many more opportunities for shared services and collaborations between local governments, and New York continues to have some of the highest taxes in the nation, a situation that we cannot overlook. While consolidations and collaborations of services may remain, local government should also look at mergers and other efficiencies to further reduce the high taxes that burden New York State residents. Please be assured we will consider your concerns as we move forward to reduce local property tax burdens. Basically, I think he's saying no thank you, But we are also taking the avenue of talking to our state legislators. We've had more, affirmative kinds of response from them than we have had from the governor's office. So I just wanted to let you know about that letter and to know that TCOG is continuing to work on that effort. It's almost as if we're being punished for doing good things in consolidations of services. Peter?
That letter makes me angry. I think there's no logic to this thing whatsoever. The reason that they need to take this into account is that effectively they're saying if you don't do it, then we're going to punish you. That's what it says. And one reason you don't do it is maybe because you're sort of lazy. But another reason is that you're so vigorous about doing this is that all of the possibilities are done. And I had a piece that I published in the Ithaca Journal a month or so ago where I actually analyzed what the governor says are the places to look for, and then it seemed to me that locally we had found all of the ones that were available. Everything that they did, with the exception of the dissolution of villages, I don't want to get into that, but with that single exception, there was simply everything that was discussed as something that we could do, we had already done. And it makes no sense whatsoever to penalize us for having been so diligent in the past for looking for these opportunities and taking advantage of them.
Peter, I would just add to that that the penalization is not just us at the legislative level. It's the people who pay real property.
Correct. Thank you. I should have said that. Thank you.
Ed Marks has to leave tonight because he's got to go to that Town of Ithaca Planning Board meeting. So he was wondering if we could move that resolution up that Carol has. Carol, could you move that for us, please, at this point?
Oh. Okay, well, you might want to ask if anybody is going to take I, J, K, or L off as well.
Well, we can do that. Do you want to move to the consent agenda first?
Yeah.
Does anyone plan to ask for those to be pulled? Doesn't sound like it, Carol. So
okay.
Why don't we just go ahead
then
and move your resolution.
Then I will move Resolution S, ID 5008. It's a budget adjustment and appropriation of unspent funds from 2013 and prior years to various accounts of the departments that report to the Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, and I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Peter Stein. Discussion. Takes a short form roll call, by the way. Ready to vote? Dooley Kiefer.
Yep. The form is filled out, but it's got very little information. $3,000 for computer hardware replacement. I have no idea if that's one piece of equipment or several, and I don't want to take time to go through this now, but I hope when we get these forms again with the budget OTRs, if there are any, that things will be presented to us in more detail.
You need a response to that question?
No, I won't take the time to do all that right now, but I noticed it specifically in this one.
All right. Jim Dennis.
It's not a budget item. It's a rollover item.
But how it's being spent is very generally filled out. It's not specific.
Do I have a copy? We passed it at the beginning of the meeting.
So we did go into this in more detail at the committee level.
I'm ready to vote.
Short form roll call, please.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. Thank you. Thank you, Carol. We'll come back to your committee.
Can I?
Yes?
So I missed an item that I just realized will happen before our next meeting under legislative privilege of the floor, which is Porch Fest.
September 14th at the
Sunday. Sure, give them a plug.
And anybody who hasn't attended this event in Northside and Fall Creek area of Ithaca, I believe that Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services is, again, a sponsor. If you haven't been over lately to the Neighborhood Pride site, they're going to be doing something in the parking lot over there as well. And this is an opportunity to look at, to hear 100 different musical groups and some non-musical groups perform throughout the neighborhood on people's porches or in the driveways or front yards, and people wander around. There's a schedule. It is one of the most fun events that happens in our community. So if you haven't been, I encourage you to go. That's the 14th of September.
Julie? Right.
If you're going back to September 14th, I think that's the day that Ithaca College performs down in DeWitt Park. It's their annual gift to the community. It's ironic that it always conflicts with Porch Fest.
Well, that's a lot. We have so many things going on here. Many things conflict, sadly. Jim, did you need to speak?
No.
Kathy?
Well, just as a point of information, they expanded the time slots this year for Porch Fest. So it's noon to 6. It might help some people that feel conflicted that they can manage to do both.
I'd like to move next to the county administrator's report. Before we start that, I'd like to suspend long enough to put the screens down. Joe Mariana, our county administrator.
Thank you, Mike. This is so dramatic, isn't it, when they dim the lights and the screens come down? I hope I can live up to that dramatic moment. I'm going to devote my entire report tonight to presenting the tentative 2015 budget. I hope you're well caffeinated. This is probably a 15 or 20-minute presentation that tries to describe in a very high-level way what's presented to you in a very thorough budget document that all of you received tonight. And if anyone is watching this on TV or on the web, it's also available as we speak online right now. So the budget is available.
It's very weighty.
It's what?
It's very weighty.
It's very weighty. So this presentation tries to summarize a great deal of information. And this is actually a summary of a summary, because there is also a budget message that you've received that's also a part of the budget document that tries to explain kind of the major themes and thrusts that are a part of this budget. And I hope if anyone has a chance to read that they do, because there is an additional level of detail that's provided when you look at that. Before I go into the slide presentation, I do want to emphasize several points about this budget. It does accomplish several of our programmatic goals, the most important of which is just sustaining existing levels of service. Increasingly, that is something you don't see in many local governments. So achieving this goal is a true achievement, that we've been able to sustain existing levels of service while also achieving our fiscal goal, which this year was to bring the budget in within the property tax cap. We've tried to support priorities that are emerging, and we'll talk about a couple of those as a part of this presentation, but they include the airport, stabilizing the airport, moving farther along with the living wage, also implementing the initial recommendations, the near-term recommendations of the Jail Alternatives Task Force. We've been able to accomplish those things without compromising the integrity of our fiscal health, and that's pretty important, too. We've applied reserves to help pay for some things in the budget. But the reserve allocation is, I think, less than it's been, at least in recent memory, certainly less than last year and much less than it was back in 2009 when I think we appropriated about $3.5 million. We will borrow as a part of this budget, but we're only going to borrow for things that are appropriate for borrowing, things that have long-term useful lives. And if the economy stays stable, we believe that the revenue and expenditure estimates that we provided are feasible, conservative, and attainable. think as you look at this budget, or at least I hope when you look at this budget, you will see that it's characterized by continuity and restraint. It's shaped by contradictory trends, and I'm going to start going through those now. But I think you'll see as you go through the document, there are really two interesting things going on that are, in fact, a bit contradictory. The first is there's some positive economic indicators. It's clear that the economy is on the mend, that a recovery is underway. So that's the positive. At the same time, we see that there are continued indications of underlying need. There are cross pressures that are being brought to bear in this budget. And it's clear that the recovery has left many people behind. Those people rely on us to provide services that are essential to them and their families. So in terms of just things that are in our environment that are shaping this budget, as we always do, we talk about context. So in terms of the economic indicators, they're generally positive. Our unemployment rate continues to fall. If you look at the trend line, you can get a better sense of the direction that we're going, and it's a very good one. Right now, our unemployment rate is 4.8%. That puts us a couple of points below the state and the country. I think we still have the lowest unemployment rate in New York State. Our inflation rate is low. We're currently at about 2% over where we were a year ago. So we're benefiting by low inflation. Consumer confidence is generally improving. And again, if you look at the trend lines, you get a better sense of where things are going. So that's good, because when people feel confident about the economy, they feel a little more willing to spend their money, which means sales tax coming into the county, the city, and all the municipalities. We're seeing positive signs there. We're seeing a moderate level of growth in consumer spending, which is reflected in our sales tax numbers. So in the first half of this year, consumer spending, which translates to sales tax, is up 3.7%. In the first half of this year compared to the same period last year. That's pretty robust growth. As you know, the stock market is continuing to rise. We've seen very strong growth since the depth of the recession back in 2009. At the same time, there are also indications of underlying need that are persistent. When you look at food stamps, now called SNAP, again, I have to point out, we don't pay for food stamps. We administer the program, we don't pay for it, but it's a really important indicator of underlying need. If you look at the trend lines, you can see that the number of SNAP cases is still rising, although the rate of growth seems to be slowing. If you look at total temporary assistance, these are the two public assistance programs that I'll go through in just a second, but the combination of people who rely on temporary assistance. The number of cases is up 17% since September of 2012. That's our post-recession low. What's really discouraging is we're actually seeing higher levels of cases in temporary assistance today than we did at the depth of the recession. So, again, some very contradictory trends. If you break that temporary assistance number down into its two parts, safety net, we've talked about this before, is continuing to trend upward. I think over the last month or so, we've seen some moderation in this. But we're still seeing an upward trend in safety net cases, and that's important for a couple of reasons, one of which is we pay 71% of the cost of that program. You recall that a couple of years ago, the state went from a 50-50 arrangement to now having us pay 71%. When you look at the other temporary assistance program, family assistance, this is concerning as well, because the trend has been down until quite recently, and now we're seeing an uptick in the number of people receiving family assistance. We don't pay much, if anything, on family assistance, but at some point those folks, if they can't find employment, will find their way to safety net and will affect us. Plus, we administer this program, so there's a burden on staff. If you look at Medicaid cases, and here again, over the last couple of years, we've seen improvements in the way the cost of Medicaid is distributed. There's currently a cap, and we're benefiting by savings through the Affordable Care Program. But if you look again at the number of individuals in this community who rely on Medicaid for their health care, and this is pre-ACA, you can see what the trend has been since the recession. We're rising by an average of 500 cases per year right now. So, again, these contradictory trends that are really shaping this budget, taking us kind of in two different directions. As we structured a budget within an environment, we had certain important goals, the most important of which is to maintain the current levels of service. But we had others. We also wanted to invest in facilities and infrastructure. That's really important. We wanted to stabilize the finances of our airport. We wanted to address emergent policy goals, things that have arisen over the past year or two that are important and that we tried to devote attention and resources to. And we wanted to maintain our fiscal strength and stability. Our capacity to address some of these problems really depends on having a strong fiscal base. And we wanted to remain within the tax cap. That was our goal this year. Where we began was with the things that have a major influence on our budget. And now we're getting into some of the nitty-gritty parts of what shaped this budget, what we were working with. First of all, wages. I think everyone knows that we don't have or won't have, unless we settle soon, contracts in place for 2015. Most of our contracts will expire at the end of this year. Some have already expired, specifically Road Patrol. This budget does, however, provide funds for restrained wage settlements, for restrained labor settlements. With respect to the workforce, there's no growth in the roster for next year, and this is the trend line that we've seen over the past decade or so. So you can see that we are far down from our peak back in 2009. We're down about 7% from that point. We've held that to that level for the last couple of years. So there has been no effect because of a larger workforce. This is a good news part of the budget. Our fringe benefits are relatively stable for 2015. The pension rates, which is I'll show you a chart in just a second, but you know, pension has been a difficult source of growth in our budget over the last several years. We've estimated that pension rates are going to fall from 18.8% of payroll down from 20.1%. Actually, we received news today that the final rate is actually going to be a tick less than that 18.8% that we've estimated. Our health premiums are up by only 5%.
What's a tick?
18.2. And, of course, the comptroller waited until the day that we released the budget to share that information with us, but it's okay. It's good news. Health premiums are up by 5%. That's another indication of the value of the Health Benefits Consortium. It is doing what we had hoped it would do, which is to keep our premiums at a very reasonable rate. I will say that the reason that the rate is only 5% is the consortium has done well. They've had rates high enough to build their reserves. They've achieved their reserve goals, and now they have excess reserves that they're applying to reduce our premiums. So importantly, there's an 8% underlying rate of growth, but after applying those reserves, the premium that we will experience next year is up by only 5%. So when you combine pension and health, those costs are actually down $190,000 of local dollars in this budget. Haven't been able to say that for a while. Here again is the trend of pensions that we track every year. You can see how much those pension costs grew from 2009 forward. That growth in those blue lines represented a $5 million increase in our budget. That's how much it meant when those lines went from where they were in 2009 to where they peaked back in 2013, $5 million. They're now beginning to come down a bit, and the lighter colored lines are where we expect them to be over the next 4 or 5 years. Mandates is another story that's not bad, but still the cost of mandates continues to rise. What we've tried to show in this chart is that there is still growth in some mandated costs. Early intervention, jail board outs, family assistance programs, and so forth are going up. Much of that cost is being offset by decreases in other mandated program areas. So when you get done with adding these up, mandates are still up by $211,000. We want to say that's good because it's less than what we've experienced in the past. It's still about 0.5% on our tax levy. So it's still growing, still significant, but up by $211,000. I thought I'd show you quickly the history of our Medicaid cost to see where that's going. And again, over the past 2 years, mostly because of some Affordable Care Act-related savings that have been shared with counties, our cost has actually dropped a bit. And I believe we're in a hard cap environment now where I think the baseline Medicaid costs will be capped. So here's a relatively good news story. And just because I like to put a dark cloud over every silver lining, I have to say, at $11.7 million, is still the largest single item in our budget. And it represents 25% of all the property taxes we would levy next year. So it's still a huge impact on the county and county taxpayers. One that's kind of new to the discussion is jail and medical board-out costs. If you look at the trends that are happening, the blue line is medical costs for inmate care. The red line is board-out costs. If you look at them together, they don't look like there's really much action happening there. But when you combine those two things and realize that these are relatively uncontrollable, you can see the growth that those have experienced over the past few years. So our budget has had to adjust for that. Capital reinvestment is important. This county has made a commitment to good infrastructure. This budget provides for a 0.5% increase in our levy that will be dedicated to pay for capital improvements. It is lower than what the policy had recommended in the capital improvement plan, which was to say that the policy said raise the levy by 0.75% last year and this year, 2014 and 2015, and then bring it down to a 0.5% increase every year after that. This is lower than that. It's a 0.5%, which has raised our capital commitment by about $225,000. Most of that is for debt service for projects that have already been issued. As we get farther into this, I'll explain a little bit more about the capital costs. If we look at sales tax, again, in terms of influences on our budget, modest growth in the sales tax, we are projecting now an increase of 2% in 2014 and 1.5% in 2015. We think that's conservative. It's still a very volatile source of revenue, so at this point we're recommending that we keep it at these relatively conservative levels. If we do that, it adds $628,000 of new revenue to this budget. That helps pay for some things like town plowing. This gets into the weeds a little bit, but this is a fairly significant increase in this budget, so it's important that you see what it is. We pay towns to plow some county roads within their boundaries, and it's a good arrangement for both the towns and for us. The amount we pay them is based on what happened before. So what we will pay them in 2015 is based on the winter experience of 2013-2014, and it was a bad winter. So the payments that we will make to towns in this budget is up by $169,000 from 2014. 2014's budget was based on a very mild winter. So that was an impact on our numbers this year. We had a couple of expected revenue losses. We knew this was going to happen, but they still have an impact. The pilots for the Lansing plants, used to be AES, now CPP, what is by schedule declining by almost $100,000 for 2015. And the Finger Lakes Library system is moving out of the library. They've been paying us rent for the space they occupy, and so that's a loss of almost $79,000 in rent. And then to sponsored and agency partners, again, influences on our budget. In TC3, legislature a couple of months ago improved a 3% increase, so that was an $83,000 hike for TC3. The public library, if you recall the arrangement from last year, we solved their structural deficit by doing two things, one by providing additional property tax support. And because the lift was so large, we had to pay for the rest of it through a draw on our own reserves. In the 2015 budget, we were proposing that the entire contribution be funded with recurring revenues. And that's really per plan from 2013. TCAD, similarly, we had a task force that was put together back in early 2013 that arrived at a new revenue model for TCAD. And as the next installment of that, there is a $96,000 local dollar increase for TCAD. As you recall, we're paying a third of the budget. The balance will be funded by the room tax. And over time, over the next 3 years, the amount of property tax support will decline as the amount of room tax revenue increases that goes to TCAD. And then directed spending cuts. To be able to meet our fiscal targets, we ask our departments and agencies to take a 1% across-the-board reduction in local dollar spending. That was $400,000, and that was applied to all non-mandated and fixed costs. So how did we do? What are the outcomes? Our first goal, primary goal, is to maintain services, and there are no reductions in services in this budget. We achieved that goal. The goal is to maintain capital investment. This budget fully funds projects in the updated CIP, so it is a fully funded plan. It does add 0.5% to our tax levy. Now, I wanted to show you what that means. So in terms of where we would go with the tax levy increases, if we continue to increase by 0.5% a year on levy, as we said we would do, that's what the line looks like. This is the amount of debt service that we expect to pay over the next 10 years. And if that schedule is followed, this is the amount of capital reserves we will have accumulated over that 10-year period. So I think that's I think speaks to our confidence in backing down the increase for capital to 0.5%, even though the policy is 3/4, in the belief that we can pay for everything that's scheduled and also deal with future projects that will arise, that will certainly arise. Another goal is to stabilize the airport finances. This budget proposes a 3-year suspension of the county administrative charges. We charge the county for services like the county attorney, personnel, finance, administration, and so forth. They don't have any of those people on their staff, so we charge them. And the charge is about $126,000 a year. Given the situation of the airport, we propose suspending that for a 3-year period. That would save the airport $126,000 a year. It would help mitigate the factors that are affecting the competitive position of the airport. And importantly, it would be funded by the application of county reserves. We're not raising property taxes to do this. We are pulling those dollars out of our reserves to be able to offset that loss of revenue to the county. We had a goal of addressing emerging policy goals. This budget does fund the near-term recommendations of the Jail Alternatives Task Force. Most of those recommendations are cost neutral. However, there was one proposal to increase the staff of OAR, and that OTR has been recommended in this budget. There are a couple of additional contracts that will be covered by the living wage in this budget, so we're making progress on that front. And then we get to the goal of fiscal stability. As I said earlier, we've tried to restrict our use of reserves. It's down from last year, and it's way down from 2009. And we have targeted those reserves only for non-recurring expenses. If you use reserves, that's the way you should use them. A couple of other noteworthy features, the most significant of which is the solid waste annual fee is proposed to go down next year by $4, from $56 to $52 per household. There are 1.5 positions being added to the facilities roster. You know that for years we've been trying to figure out ways to be able to augment their roster, to be able to maintain the buildings that we have. These are being done within target by taking some money that's been in their budget in anticipation of having to pay rent for those people who are in the old library. We've had money in their budget just in case we had to rent space if we had to abandon the library. We're now feeling confident enough in the progress in the Human Services Building that money has basically been repurposed, its target money, to support 1.5 additional positions. DSS is reducing its roster by 3 positions. So as you look through our FTEs, you will see slight changes in a number of departments. The bottom line is our roster is flat. Last noteworthy feature, through the OTR process, several agencies did receive increases that are beyond the 1% target that we established in the summertime when those targets were presented. And our goal is to stay within the cap. This budget proposes a levy that would go up by 2.34% over last year. We now project the cap to be 2.65%. It's higher than what we'd estimated in the springtime. Not much, it was 2.36, but it's higher than what we had projected in the springtime. So we're well within the cap. And last, to kind of the numbers part of the budget, you recall that the original fiscal target was based on a tax cap that was 2.36%. It would have allowed us $1.06 million in new taxing authority. The budget that's before you tonight would raise the levy by 2.34%, and it's basically the same amount of levy as had been originally allocated or targeted. In terms of the over-target requests, we received $1.15 million in requests that included about $590,000 funded out of reserves and $540,000 that would be funded by increases in our tax levy. In terms of what's recommended, the budget that I presented tonight supports about $820,000 of those OTRs. It applies about $600,000 in reserves and affects the levy by $210,000. So that leaves about a third of $1 million in OTRs that were not funded in this budget, both in total dollars and local dollars. I will tell you that there are some OTRs that weren't funded at all, and you'll find some that were partially funded. So someone may have asked for, pick a number, $20,000, and the recommendation is $10,000. You will see some of those in this budget. Our total budget stands at $180 million, and it's a little footnote there. That compares to $170 million last year. We're up by about $9.8 million, but $7 million of that is because of a new way of accounting for bond anticipation notes, for the issuance and retirement of bond anticipation notes. When we get to this in the departmental presentations, Rick will explain it. But when you take out that accounting adjustment, the real growth in our total spending is up by $2.8 million, and that's just 1.6%. So when I talked about constraint earlier, this is one demonstration of that. The local budget is the part of the budget we fund with property taxes and sales taxes and a few other local sources. That local supported budget is up by $1.6 million. That's a 2% increase in the locally supported budget. The tax levy, again, up by 2.34%. The tax rate, this is interesting. The tax rate's down from 2014. The reason for that is our tax base is growing at a pretty good clip. So our tax base is growing faster than our tax levy. And remember, numerator, denominator. So as the levy is up, the numerator and the tax base is the denominator. So when you apply that arithmetic, our tax rate is actually down by 0.7% for next year. At the same time, the median value of a home has gone up a little bit. We showed $165,000 here. That's what it is right now. Last year it was $163,000. So when you look at the bill for a $163,000 average home in 2014 and compare it to a $165,000 home today, this is what you get. In 2015, the bill on that average home would be $1,129. That compares to $1,122 in 2014. So the impact of our tax levy on the average homeowner is $6.34. And that's a 0.6% change. And then when you take into account that that same homeowner will see a $4 reduction in the solid waste fee, the net impact on that homeowner of this budget is $2.34 in 2015. That doesn't take into account that under the state's property tax freeze program, the state will issue a check for $6.34 to that average homeowner to offset the effect of our tax hike. That's not taken into account here. So the last thing is just the budget document itself. As it's been for the last couple of years, Section 1 is the overview. Section 2 is a good fiscal overview. I hope you look at it. 3 is the capital plan. Then we get into the meat of the departmental budgets, the OTRs, and the programs. Section 5, agency budgets with their OTRs and programs. Appendix A, chart of accounts, and the fee schedules. If you remember last year, we came to you late with fee schedules, kind of a last-minute thing. They are incorporated in the budget this year, so take a look at them, and they will be approved as a part of your approval of the budget. And then contracts and memberships. Before I close, and I appreciate your patience in sitting through this long presentation, I do want to thank department heads, their staffs, agency heads and their staffs, for putting in a lot of effort on this budget. In order to make this budget look simple and be a good decision-making tool, there's a lot of effort that occurred behind the scenes. And departments were very good about that and held to their numbers. I also want to thank and recognize Kevin McGuire, who's sitting behind me, who has taken on this task. And it is extraordinarily complex. And he's done a great job and spent too many of his weekends doing this budget. But I think the effort pays off as you look at this document. I hope you would agree it's a good decision-making tool for you. It explains how we propose to spend the taxpayers' dollars, and I really do appreciate the work that he has done to help bring you this document. So that concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Joe. We could take a few questions, but remember, we're just beginning the budget process, and we'll be having many meetings about this budget, so let's try to keep it brief. brief and crisp. I have Dooley, Peter, then Jim.
Thank you. Looking at page 22, you mentioned additional contracts covered with the living wage, and I wondered if you could tell us what you have in mind at this point.
Yeah, there's directly, there's only one. It's in the Department of Mental Health. It's suicide prevention. So there was a request, and it's in your OTR stack, so there was a request to increase the amount of the contract to be able to pay the living wage there. And we have recommended funding that one. And to get into the weeds a little bit, we have moved target money out of contingency where we had parked money for living wage and shifted it over to mental health. So we've been able to make that change without affecting the bottom line of the budget. And then kind of indirectly through this budget, the Human Services Coalition is working with another of its contract agencies. I'm going blank on which one it is. But if you recall, Human Services Coalition gets both our tax dollars and sales tax money. So we've had a conversation with them, and they're going to allocate some of their sales tax money to get a second agency up to the living wage level.
I can't remember whether there is any policy we put in place to have these requests and decisions go through any committees. I think it's sort of in limbo. We have a report which we haven't accepted or adopted. So is that's why it's in your hands right now.
Yes, and we have brought a report to GO in April, and it was really based on that we identified contracts that weren't paying living wage. You recall we adjusted one. FoodNet got an adjustment at that time. As a part of the budget reviews, we've been asking all departments, do you have any contracts where we need to be talking about living wage? So we've tried to sort through that, and we can talk about that as we go through the departmental reviews.
I have one other question, which is short. Since the tax cap the projection has changed, what is the dollar amount difference? And since you clearly think we should stay under the tax cap, that would give us a little more money to spend. What does that come to?
I think it's in the neighborhood of $120,000.
Okay. Thank you.
Peter?
The number that caught my eye the most, that just sounds like it makes no sense whatsoever, is the increase in SNAP money accompanying the decrease in unemployment. And I must say, I've heard this before. When I drive by myself at night, I listen to talk radio, and it's something I've heard more than once. They said, what a disaster Obama's been, that that the food stamps are way up over what he had when he came into office. And that's repeated often, and that sort of agrees with the data that you show. So what's the reason? Is it that the same person now gets more food stamps in this year than they did 5-6 years ago? I mean, that's one possibility that would cause it to go up. And the other is that the unemployment is improperly, not improperly, but is not meaningfully defined, because it includes people who have given up. Have you any idea why it's going up? Is it something, one of those two things?
Pick me.
Well, I'll defer.
That's your answer, and then he can get some assistance if he needs it.
The graph that you were shown is the cases, so it's the number of kind of households who...
Oh, it's cases. Okay,
that was cases.
All right.
It wasn't dollars.
Okay, all right. Well, that answers a lot. So,
Martha?
Well, I think people are maybe employed, but at lower wages or fewer hours than they used to be. Lots of more higher quality jobs are replaced by service jobs. So people may be in the category of employed, or employed part-time instead of full-time, so they're the dollars they have in their pockets to buy food are less. And cost of housing, in particular in this community, squeeze out more and more and more and more of the rest of the budget, so that we see, even if you get, say, modest increases in your job, the housing costs are completely out of line. So people end up needing that kind of assistance.
So does that mean that the number of people that are officially in the poverty, below the poverty line, is increasing since 2006 than it is today, or whenever it is, 2006, yeah? That it's larger now than it was then, before the crash?
Well, poverty, you know, well, why don't you ask your committee, but the poverty line is a sort of arbitrary number.
Yeah, but it's at least a constant number.
That's, well, I think that's something that could do a little more
research.
I probably can't answer it here, Peter.
Yeah, I don't mean to prolong it. I'm just...
Kathy, did you need to say something?
Martha covered all of it, except that I'd like to focus on the fact that the jobs that have been created not only are lower wage jobs, they're also with no benefits or fewer benefits. And when somebody has to work two jobs, they're often their fuel costs go up. They end up having to pay more for daycare. And the increased costs that go along with having two jobs with two shifts they just tip it. Some people I know are working three jobs, and they still aren't getting where they were before. And a lot of families that would never have seen themselves in previous job iterations asking for public assistance are now asking for public assistance and understanding that it can happen to anyone.
Okay. I have Jim Dennis, then back to Martha, now, and then Will Burbank.
I will make one short comment on the job situation that all of you are talking about. I think it's a very complex issue that cannot be answered, you know, quickly here, and DSS would probably have the best numbers about the people in Tompkins County and what's happened since 08. And I think before we go too far, then those are kinds of things that we probably need to know. I just want to reiterate what Joe said about Kevin being literally a first year person, first year and a half coming into this system, and had to learn it from the get-go. And I think it's been a wonderful learning experience. I don't know if it has been for him, but it's been a learning experience. And I think it benefits us all that he's been here and learned the things that he has. And it will only be better as he moves forward. The other thing that I want to mention is that I appreciate that the county administrator and Kevin and department heads brought us in at the target number that we talked about many months ago over at TCAT. So we will start there, and you all have a new schedule in front of you, or you have available to you, and we will see where we will end up in November. But I appreciate very much that they were able to put that budget together and bring it in where they did.
Martha, Will, Carol, and then let's see if we can kind of move on. We've got a lot of people waiting.
I'll try to do a couple things quickly. One is that a couple of comments that health premiums at 5% or even underlying rate at 8%, I mean, you don't have to go back far where 12% was good. I mean, 18, 20% yearly increases. So that's a huge accomplishment. A really quick and, I don't know, anal request. On our printed versions of graphs, the colored lines don't show up. If you can, like, do dashes and stars and things that where the in black and white, you can still tell which line is which. That'd be great. Not to redo it, but okay. On the cases and number of cases in Medicaid, you said that was before the ACA. So in other words, New York expanded Medicaid.
I pull the state data off. So I pull it from the Department of Health. They're really slow in getting it up. So the last data I have is for the 2013 year. Okay. So that was before some of those big structural changes would have affected the numbers.
So do we know what to expect?
For the reductions, for the amounts that we will see in cost reductions, do you mean?
Well, I guess the question is, New York expanded Medicaid, or, you know, bought into the expansion of Medicaid. What's the impact on the county? I've not been sure whether there was some kind of reimbursement that came back to us that covered increases in expenses. I wasn't sure. How's it work?
I don't think the volume, first of all, the volume has been affected this year. We haven't seen data from the state yet to show us how much that volume has changed. In terms of the state's reimbursement to us for those kinds of administrative expenses that go with higher volumes, no, but remember, the state's taking over some of those administrative functions now. So there's kind of a trade-off there. Where we're realizing a money benefit is in the state being willing to share some of the savings that is coming directly because the federal government is now paying a higher Medicaid reimbursement rate for certain things than it did in the past. So the state's realized a windfall from that, and they're sharing some of that with us, which is why the numbers have gone down a bit.
Okay, and if I might just, you mentioned that the airport you see putting in for 3 years $126,000, basically put in by not charging. Now, that wouldn't take effect till January, right? Is there a way, and I guess it's a different mechanism, it's not the 2015 budget, it's a current year expense, is there a way that we might begin to relieve them of that as soon as possible for the last quarter of this year since they're having trouble right now?
Well, that's interesting. I haven't thought about it. We haven't had a conversation about it because the money is coming out of reserves. It's conceivable that that could be accelerated.
If that, I you know, did the math, that's $31,500. I don't know if that'll make any difference, you know, in real time for them, but
something that we can look at.
And one other quick, a new lumber. You mentioned the tax base is up, so is that evaluation? Is that new construction or is it kind of higher?
It's both. I don't know if Jay has.
Jay, you want to come to a microphone, please?
Most of it is due to new values with increased selling prices for probably 1 to 0.9% new lumber. There are some bigger projects, but most is just new value.
Thank you.
Let's go to Will.
I'll pass. Thanks.
Carol?
Yeah, I had a question about the solid waste fee going, you're showing it going down. Right. As I recall, when that went up, we were very concerned about what kind of reaction we would get, and we were somewhat surprised that nobody seemed to notice. And I'd like to know if there have been complaints about it having gone up. What I have heard are many, many, many requests that we expand the collection of compost in parts of the county that we've tried that. It's been a really popular program, and I'm hearing more and more about problems with rats in certain parts of town, and some speculation that may or may not be founded, maybe unfounded, but that concern that it has to do with the increase in number of people wanting to compost. So I'm just curious about the choice to have that go down if we haven't, in fact, had any complaints about it. And what's the total change in price?
When solid waste comes, they'll be able to explain this. It has been enabled by the fact that, again, a lot of debt service is being retired. So we were able to do that without compromising programs. And there are commitments here to composting. I don't know if they're in line with what you're envisioning. But Barb is comfortable that at this rate she can sustain programs, she can continue on the composting with the composting initiative, and still pass on a benefit to ratepayers of $4. So, again, she'll be able to give you the details on what is still supported in the budget.
Jim? No? Okay. Can we wrap this up then? Joe, thank you for that very thorough report, and thanks to everybody for all the work that they've done, all the department heads and staff and your department especially, and Kevin, that you've mentioned. We really appreciate it. Now we can get to our part of the work. Let's suspend long enough to put the screens up, please. us this morning is Jim. All right, thank you. Let's go to report from the county attorney. Assistant Attorney Steve Flash is here.
I have nothing to report.
Well, that was easy. Thanks for being here. Move to report from the Director of Finance, Rick Snyder.
No report tonight.
Thank you. I'm sorry?
No report tonight.
Sorry. Oh, could I ask a question?
Certainly.
In the resolution that we're accept the footings, there's a reference to a committee on footings, and I don't know who that is, and I'm just curious, Rick, who's the committee?
I think that's a Jay Franklin question, isn't it?
Okay.
Okay. Is there a committee on footings? Julie just asked a question about the footings resolution that's coming up. Is there a committee on footings?
I would think the only committee would be GEO.
There's something in the memo that mentions the committee on footings, and I had just never heard anything called that before. And I thought it was a question for Rick, not you, I'm sorry.
There may have been in 1962 when that resolution was first written.
Thank you. Let's move into the consent agenda. We have some advisory board appointments. To the Air Services Board, we have Leslie McBean Claiborne and David G. Prunty. To the Public Information Advisory Board, Seth Baratas. To the Greater Tompkins County Municipal Health Insurance Consortium Board of Directors, Deborah Griffith Palermo. I'll come back to resolutions. Are there any resolutions to be added or withdrawn? I forgot to ask that. I don't think so. Okay, on the consent agenda, the following resolutions out of Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Resolution A, ID 5019, budget adjustments, purchase of composting equipment, solid waste, and recycling. Out of Government Operations Committee, Resolution B, ID 5046, authorizing acceptance of a Federal Aviation Administration grant to purchase new snow removal equipment, a blower broom, at the Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution C, ID 5043, acceptance of a Federal Aviation Administration grant for terminal apron expansion and de-icing pad project, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution D, 5042, budget adjustment, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution E, 5040, authorization to accept a grant from the State Archives, County Clerk. Resolution F, 5029, establishing county equalization rates. Resolution G, 5028, adoption of regular and supplemental reports of footings, totals, and assessment rolls.
Off?
Which one?
That's off. Okay.
I'll hear more about footings.
I'm going to ask that Resolution H come off, which is a subdivision map filing certification requirement pursuant to Section 503-7 of the Real Property Tax Law. Out of the Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Resolution I, 5038, making a negative declaration of environmental significance in relation to resolution of 2014 authorizing an agreement with the State of New York for transfer of Tagannick Boulevard parcel, which buffers the Black Diamond Trail. Resolution J, ID 5039, authorizing an agreement with the State of New York for transfer of Tagannick Boulevard parcel, which buffers the Black Diamond Trail. Resolution K, ID 5036, making a negative declaration of environmental significance in relation to resolution of 2014 implementation of the 2014 Stream Corridor Restoration and Flood Hazard Mitigation Program projects. Resolution L, ID 5037, authorizing the implementation of the 2014 Stream Corridor Restoration and Flood Hazard Mitigation Program projects. Out of Health and Human Services Committee, Resolution M, ID 4975, authorization to increase hours, planner, evaluator, health department. Is there a motion on the remaining
resolutions on the consent agenda. I have one from Carol with a second from Leslin. Discussion. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed, that's unanimous. Yes.
I know we have at least one member of the public, maybe more, on Resolution O. I think waiting for Resolution O.
Okay. We can go to that. We got, and then we'll try to take a look around the audience and see what other resolutions we need to act on. Nathan, could you move Resolution O, please, out of your committee?
Moving Resolution O, urging the Federal Communications Commission to establish a strong set of rules that provide for a neutral Internet, and I so move.
Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion. I have Dooley and then Martha.
I think in your red folders there's a version with some changes that I proposed, and I'm looking at the, having listened to Mr. Bozak speak earlier, with the emphasis totally being on business competition, I hope that the added words don't take anything away from that. I think on the bottom of page one of the ones with revisions, the language that had been added says, as well as all, quote, ordinary, unquote, people. And I think it would be better to say, as well as for all ordinary users, rather than talking about ordinary people, that our concerns are very much primarily about competition, but that everybody should be treated equally. So that's what the users is for.
So everyone's clear. I believe we're talking about the revised as adopted by committee resolution. Is that right, Nathan?
Yes.
Okay. Dooley's requesting some changes, are those something that you want to consider or not?
Can I make a suggestion?
I'll get to you, Carol. I'll get to you. All right. Let's take Carol's comment.
So, would the word individual users do a better job of just describing what we? This is
yes. That's
and are you referring to the copy that was revised as adopted by committee?
Yes.
Because I don't see anything else.
Okay.
And so it's the words as well as ordinary people was removed by the committee. It looked like. In location from one of the whereases to another.
That was just a typo. It was inserted in the wrong place.
But are we trying to get at the concept of individual users, and maybe people from the committee who are here can weigh in? What should we? Would you have a Dave or
Dave,
the other?
Dave, you want to speak to that?
I'll tell you what. I'm going to ask Brim to come up and speak to that. He drafted most of this document, and I think he's probably better qualified to speak to it than I am.
Fine.
Well, I doubt that, but hi, I'm Scott Brim, Town of Ithaca. It doesn't change anything substantive, but for me, the word users has a connotation of consuming, watching Netflix, receiving mail, things like that, as opposed to the flavor we were trying to give of producers.
Yeah,
that's all.
Okay.
So I would just leave it individuals, what you said the other night.
Okay. Mike, did you have your hand up?
I did. I was on the committee that already heard this, so I wanted to thank the committee for doing all their work. My big question for them was, you know, if something's not broken, why are we fixing it? And from you, basically, I was given the reason is because we're not trying to fix it. We're trying to stop them from changing it quite so drastically. So I really appreciated all your work. And I wanted to thank my predecessor, too. She put a lot of effort in on this. So.
Kathy?
Thanks. I want to support this. And the only question I had was, when I see something in quotes, it makes me think it's referring to something somewhere else. And I wondered if the ordinary came from the law or from some, if there was a reason that it was in quotes and why it was in there. Not that I want to spend a lot of time on this, and I don't really care how it's said, but just curiosity got me. So if someone wants to let me know where that came from and what its significance was, is it an artifact?
It's an artifact.
Okay.
It's not in the law.
Okay, thanks. I'm in support of this.
Okay. Well, let's see if we can get this language cleared up here. Did somebody want to move an amendment? Is that the idea?
If it's not friendly, yes.
No, it's friendly, yeah.
All right, so what are we accepting as friendly?
As well as for all individuals, is what I understand.
All right, is that friendly with you, Dave, as a seconder?
Yes, I guess so.
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, so that's added.
Does Martha? The word ordinary come out?
Yes.
Ordinary comes out.
And people, too.
All right, anything else? Carol, then Martha.
Well, first, I just want to really thank the committee and Dave and Pat Pryor and all the people who've worked on this, because this is just one of the most important things facing the ordinary people in our county today. So thank you for working on this. I know that it's usually our practice when we are weighing into either national or state policy to send copies to, as part of the resolution, to list that we're sending copies of that resolution to those who are in a position to affect change. And so I just would like to propose an amendment that we resolved further that copies of this resolution will be sent to, and I would suggest, President Obama, Senator Schumer, Senator Gillibrand, any Congress people from this area, Reed, chairs of the appropriate House and Senate committees, and I understand the committee itself, the Broadband Committee, may have some other ideas, so, and others deemed appropriate by the Tompkins County Broadband Committee. So I'd like to move that.
Okay. Is there a second? Seconded by Martha.
And does that include the FCC itself?
Well, yes. Let's add.
Okay, all the right names at the FCC.
I mean, that's friendly to me. It's just,
that's friendly?
Yeah. It's just
is that friendly to Dave?
The right people.
All right, sounds like it's friendly, Carol. All right. Anything else? Can we vote? Martha?
Yeah, again, I just want to say I know that committee worked very hard on this, and I got a couple of calls to say, you know, why? Well, what was the importance? And you know, the idea of what's this reason? Wait a minute, what's that called? Commercially reasonable. Like, if that weren't as big a loophole as you could ever drive an internet carrier through, I don't know what would be. So I'm really glad you're doing that. That you've done this, and thank you very much.
Okay, let's vote. All those in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? And that's carried unanimously as amended. All right. Who really wants to go home?
Trick
you guys can.
I have a feeling.
Trick question.
I'd like to take the local law about the smoking next. It's resolution Y, and I'd like Peter to move that, please.
Yes, I'd like to move that resolution. If there's a second, then I'll say a word or two about it.
Seconded by Kathy Luz Herrera.
I find this quite interesting. You want me to read it? Yeah. Where is it? Which is it? Y? Yankee, yeah. ID 5004, adoption of local law number of 2014, amending local laws number 3 of 2003, a local law amending Chapter 72 of the Tompkins County Code to restrict smoking in places of employment, restaurants, and taverns, Article 2.
Okay, so you want to finish your comment?
Yeah, I... As an old addict of cigarettes, I have personal experience with this particular problem. And this is interesting because we heard things from the public on both sides of it, saying that there are some people to whom it's important and that they want it one way, and then another group of people want it another way. And it's a real issue as to how you make that kind of a decision as to which side you're going to favor. And it seems to me that, frankly, I was sympathetic to the people who said it's a good thing to have people use these cigarettes because these e-cigarettes because it can take them away from smoking, which is, however bad e-cigarettes are, it's clear that real cigarettes are a whole lot worse. There's no question about that. And it does seem to me, when you're trying to make that judgment, it's a question of what a person wants to do themselves, their own liberty, and the effect on people who have no alternative but to be in that area. And it seems to me that when a situation like that comes up, you have to vote on the side of the people whom are affected and don't want to be affected. That is to say, the person who wants to smoke his e-cigarettes or inhale his e-cigarettes can go outside the way smokers do today. But the people who are working in there can't go outside. Therefore, I think it's important to take the effect on the people that can't leave the room much more than the people who can leave the room. And it's for that reason that I'm supporting this resolution.
Kathy?
Thank you. Those of you that are looking at the resolution will see that at the Health and Human Services Committee, I voted against this, and I'll explain why. You note that I seconded it right now. So the reason I voted against it was there was a move to change the wording of the law itself, and I felt that it watered it down. I understand that it was discussed a lot at the last meeting, and I'm willing to support this now, even in this state, because I think it's so important. And Peter hit the nail on the head as a worker rights advocate. It's important to note that people that are working these three jobs now that are still qualifying for assistance really don't have much of a choice. You know, it may be said, they knew that when they took the job, but the fact is, more and more people don't have a choice where they go to work and in what circumstances they work. So I feel that the balance between personal liberties and public health here heavily weighs on the side of public health, and whether or not it's a potential harm or an actual harm will probably be debated for the next 5 decades if climate change and global warming is any indication. There are people that will never accede, even if the phrase "don't let the facts confuse me" comes to mind. So I really think it's our job to go ahead and make sure that the public health is, if not preserved, at least paid some attention to in this case. And regardless of my concern about one little word in this, the overall thing is worth it. So I'm supporting this.
Jim?
I am going to vote in favor of this, and it's very simple for me. Those of you who don't know, I'm a Memorial Sloan Kettering graduate. 11 years ago, I took part in a wonderful cancer treatment program there and survived it to this day. And I was a smoker and smoked for 25 years. It is nonsense, some of the stuff that I've already heard. You can find 5 scientists anywhere to say, there's no effect on anything. Anything that mimics cigarette smoking is not worth anyone's time. You can't buy a candy cigarette anymore anywhere because someone said, it mimics cigarette smoking. And believe me, there are no plus sides to cigarette smoking at all. And if the people who vote against me because I support banning e-cigarettes, I'm good with that, as long as I don't have to pay for their lung treatments, lung cancer treatments, and oxygen bottles that they have to carry around at the end of this. So it's just nonsense that anyone believes that e-cigarettes are worth anything at all. And no constituent called me up, and I know there are people who are going to say, well, he's just being crazy. Well, yeah, I am, and I'm going to stay that way.
I would like to speak for just a minute and say that I was a strong supporter of the original law in 2003, which, for all the reasons that Peter mentioned about protecting people in the workplace, this county legislature adopted back then. And I'm a strong supporter of this amendment to the local law. I think these nicotine delivery systems can't help but add vapor to the workplace. And I don't think we should be doing anything to encourage people to be able to make money on some new permutation of nicotine delivery system. So I support this. Nathan, did you want to speak?
Yeah, I just wanted to note that the resolution states that I voted against the resolution, but I did not. I actually voted for it.
That was a mistake.
Yeah,
right?
It was a mistake. Okay. Yeah, what happened is that I voted against the adding of the word potential. But what I did want to say, though, is that this also is helpful from a regulatory standpoint because these vaporizer devices can also be used for vaporizing other substances. In fact, the e-cigs and a lot of the actual vaporizers that vaporize loose leaves, it actually low burns them. It heats them up just so that they emit whatever chemicals, whether it's marijuana or tobacco leaves, right? They're almost indistinguishable from e-cigarettes too. So from a regulatory standpoint, I think it makes sense to have e-cigs be restricted so that you can restrict all these types of devices that are essentially smoking.
Dooley?
I have two things. First, I listened to the Trumansburg resident who praised his e-cigs, but he mentioned his home is where he works, and he would be fined $1,000 a day for using an e-cigarette in his home. That is not how I read packet page 18, which says place of employment means any indoor area or portion thereof under the control of an employer in which employees of the employer, et cetera. He gave me the distinct impression that he is in business for himself. He is not an employer, unless you consider yourself an employee also. So I don't think this would affect him at all, and I wanted to see if the county attorney agrees with that view.
Steve, be sure to use your microphone, please.
And if you want,
I think if he's, I mean, I haven't had a chance to study that, but I would think, I mean, like you say, if he's in his own residence, he's self-employed by himself, he's free to do what he wants in his own home.
Okay, thank you. I wanted to look at packet page 81, capital letter G. I wanted to propose two changes in that section. In line 3, it says vape pens pose a potential public health risk. I would like to change the word potential to likely. And when we had this discussion earlier, when Mr. Krupa was here, I think that he supported that change at that time, but I don't mean to speak for him now. I'd like to propose that change in the next to the last line. It says, contain known carcinogens and chemicals that can cause airway irritation. I'd like to insert, and fine particulates that easily enter anyone's lungs. I've read more about what's in the emissions, and fine particulates you've got no protection from at all, and they can carry in any number of things. So those are the two changes I'm proposing.
Do you want to move those as an amendment?
Well, if that's the best way to do it, yes.
I think with a local law, that's probably the way we ought to.
Are they friendly?
Is there a second to Dooley's proposed changes?
Can you go over the changes again?
I'm looking at
small particulate, that part. But
what?
I heard your small particulate part. I'm just...
Page 80. 1, letter G, the third line, instead of pose a potential public health risk, pose a likely public health risk. Change the word potential to likely. And the other one was the fine particulates.
Is there a second? Seconded by Kathy Luz Herrera. Discussion on the amendment. Will Burbank, then Mike Sigler, then Martha Robertson.
Well, I will not be voting for this amendment. I was comfortable with the language as written. The reality is that we simply do not know. And on the precautionary principle, I'm willing to accept, yes, there is a potential risk. What we all know is that there are no standards. These are unregulated, so there's all over the map. Some may not. I don't think, despite the references to scientific studies tonight, I don't think we truly has been enough research on that. So I think it's more accurate to say at this point we don't know, and the way it was written right is what I would support.
Mike?
I like it as is. I wouldn't support that either because, I don't know either. But I will say that I was actually not very supportive of this when I started. And then the more I thought about it, I smoked for a long time. It took my mother dying of cancer for me to quit. So the one thing the woman said who spoke was that the denormalization of smoking. And I will say that. My daughter is 9. It's unusual now for her to see a smoker. At least she'll point it out. She wants to go up to people and say, hey, you're going to get cancer. Try to steer her away from that. But I think that's where we're at. I mean, even though 20% of the population still smokes in New York State, you're getting to a point where it's weird to see people smoking. And that's been a lot of effort by the government and by just people in general. So that's why I am supporting this as is.
Martha, then Peter.
Yeah, I just, in case there's any comment from the health department people who are still here, if they want to comment on the particulates or the likely public risk.
Frank Krupa.
It is true that the particulate matter is an issue as well. Again, as I said last time when you were discussing this, this is the intent of the law. And it's my belief that this is you as a legislature saying what you believe in this particular section. Just to clarify one thing that Dooley said, I believe that it is a public health risk. Any modifier that you add to it, you as a legislature are free to do in the intent portion. And as far as I'm concerned, that would be appropriate.
Peter Stein, on the amendment.
I'll repeat what I said before when we had the same discussion at the last meeting. It is not friendly, and I will not vote for it. And the reason has nothing to do with it's a procedural thing. We talked about this at committee, talked about it at length, and argued it. And I don't think the English is particularly good in that sentence. But nonetheless, since it was the committee did make a choice and raised hands, I will not vote against it, except in a situation where it isn't clearly wrong. So I think that we should just leave it the way the committee wrote it.
Kathy?
Thanks. I won't prolong this except to say there's been a couple of reports in the news since we even started considering this. One is from the World Health Organization report on regulation of e-cigarettes and similar products. I followed a bunch of the links and spent a lot of time reading it. Basically, it has to do with chromium and other contents that are byproducts. And the discussion now is how much a bystander would take in that would count as a health risk. Well, if you have to work in a bar and everybody there is smoking e-cigarettes, how are you going to measure that? Well, it could be discussed for a long time. I think it goes beyond potential, but I'm not going to waste a lot of the people's time. It's why I seconded Dooley's suggestions, and I think it's the right way to go. But if the majority doesn't feel that way, I understand. I do think that this is the right thing to do, though.
Okay. Are we ready to vote? This is on Dooley's amendment to add the two changes. Are we all clear on that?
Could you read the second one especially, that full sentence?
The first change is in line 3, changing the word potential to likely. And then changing the second to last line, adding at the end of the sentence after irritation and fine particulates that easily enter into anyone's lungs.
Okay, we're ready to vote. All those in favor of the amendment, please raise your hand.
Aye.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those opposed? Everyone else. So that's the amendment is defeated. Now we're back on the main motion. Are we ready to vote on the main motion? All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? I believe that's unanimous. Thank you. And thank you to our health department for bringing this forward to the committee. All right, what else are we looking for? I think some folks are looking, again, in your department, Peter, for Resolution W. Is that correct? I see some nods out there.
Give us the page numbers on these. W, I found this.
69.
Okay.
What's the page number?
69.
And, Mike, after this, can we do the count, the other policy as well on the county IT? Because
sure.
It's a lot of the same folks.
Sure.
Okay, you want to do?
I want to do Resolution W, ID 4986, adopting policy 11-47, breach incident response.
I'll move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna.
I think it speaks for itself. We're required to have this response for what happens if the privacy of medical records are breached, and we now have a procedure which corresponds to our responsibilities. So.
Paula, did you want to mention anything, or just are there for questions?
The version of the policy that you have in your packet, we did have some additional discussion at the point of the GO committee, and I know that although the policy was introduced to Health and Human Services, GO committee gives it the final review before it comes to the full legislature. Nathan, I didn't know if you wanted to make any comments about this or...
I prefer not to on this one.
Okay.
I have plenty on the other one.
Okay. I believe that the version that we're asking you to vote on tonight is included in your red folders. Is that correct, Kathy?
Yes, it is.
All right. Just to be clear, these are really grammatical items. In some cases, there were items that add a little bit more clarity. There was some question around, for example, the use of the word client, and that, in fact, it might be clients that seek services from the county, but it could also include employees and so forth. So we corrected the language a little bit so that it would be much more inclusive in that. There was a request to add definition for the word breach, and we put that into the definition section. We also added a little more clarity to the use of the terms PI, private information, and PHI, protected health information. And then lastly, in Section 3, Item 6, we were a little general in how we said we would update you. Now we're a little more specific, and we would like to give you a status report semiannually.
Information? Which version? I only have one that says submitted by Legislator Kiefer, changes in red. Is that the one we're talking about?
That's the one we're talking about, yes. That was the discussion at the GO committee meeting.
Kathy?
Okay, I'm almost clear on this, so... Was this version with the changes in red passed by the GO committee?
Nathan?
Sorry, what was that question?
I would like to know if this version that we got with the changes in red was passed by the GO committee.
It was not passed by the GO committee, but what happened is that by this time in the GO committee, I believe our 5:30 meeting was at 8:15 or so, and so we actually just had we called the question on it and just got it passed in committee. but there was a lot of discussion about Dooley working with the appropriate folks to make sure that her concerns were met, and since and if there were no and that we would most likely be willing to entertain non-substantive changes, which I believe these are.
If I might add, during the meeting, I volunteered to meet with Legislator Kiefer, and that was the other reason why I was giving you a summary of these changes, just so it would be clear that these changes did not in any way change the integrity of the policy. The other challenge that we had is that the GO committee meeting met exactly 1 week prior to this meeting. It was making it kind of difficult to get the changes in and everything and time enough for this meeting, so we were really racing against the clock on this one. But I assure you that I felt, along with the original author, who is also in the audience this evening, Karen Gonta, that these changes were friendly and,
right.
in essence,
sure
helpful.
If we stayed in the meeting until 9, we probably would have had something like this.
All right, so is that clear, everyone? The version we're talking about is the revised version that was in your packets. Yes, Julie?
Before this meeting, it's the first time I've seen it, this version with the red, and I noticed the word client was still in there in two places. And so I spoke with the ITS people who are here tonight, and I will direct you to the definitions section and point out the definition of complaints as a report from client, and that should be changed now to a report that an individual's privacy rights have been violated. And the word client appears once more in the definition of incident, any event that potentially puts at risk the security, privacy, or integrity of client information. It should say of an individual's information.
Well, where are we with that?
Those were the only two places that client hadn't been replaced by something else, and I think that ITS approves those changes.
It's consistent with the way the term client was adjusted in the previous version.
Okay, so is that all right with you, Peter, as the mover? And I forgot who seconded.
No, I'm sorry. It's not. I don't consider it friendly.
Okay.
Which? Sorry, I got to.
Do you want to move those as an amendment?
I move those two changes that I just read to you.
I'll second it.
Seconded by Nathan.
And could I ask for someone from ITS to address those changes, please?
They don't want
to. Greg
Potter.
The client changes, this is Greg Potter of ITS. The terminology of the use of client in definitions causes no change in the policy. And it is, as Paul had stated, is consistent with the rest of the policy as it was drafted. We missed those two definitions in the use of the word client in the policy.
Okay. Are we ready to vote on the amendment, Dooley's amendment, to change those words about client? All those in favor of the amendment, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? One opposed. All right, now back on the main motion. Carol?
Yeah, well, I want to thank those who worked on this one as well, and I hate to bring up something from an additional point from a meeting that went till 8 o'clock that started when?
5:30.
At 5:30. Well, that's not so bad. I've been at meetings that started at 3:30. Okay. If I were trying to deal with what I should do when stormwater leaked out of a culvert or a waterway, I would search for the word breach. And if I were trying to figure out what to do if I felt that somebody I worked with's privacy or confidentiality had been violated, I would search in the index of our policies for the word privacy or the word individual confidentiality. So I'm concerned that the title of this. I understand that we have to submit a breach incident response report to somebody or a bunch of places, and that we have to do that. But I would like to see a way that the words privacy and confidentiality, or at least one or the other, if I didn't find the first, I would search on the second, could make it into the title of this, or barring that, into our index somehow.
You mean an amendment?
So I would like to amend this. Well, I'm open to suggestions about how. If the words breach incident response need to be first, so breach incident response for privacy and confidentiality, I would have done it privacy or confidentiality breach incident response. But I understand from Paula that it has to, that those from outside of the county might look first for the words breach. So, and I would change that in both the resolution title and where it's referred to, and then the title of the policy itself.
So restate what you wanted us to read.
Well, I'm open to suggestions from Paula as
to
whether.
You want it to read. You're moving the amendment.
Okay. Breach incident I'll move privacy or confidentiality breach incident response.
Is there a second for that proposed amendment? I don't see one. Okay, let's move on.
Then can I ask the question about whether this can be entered into the index of policies later with under the words privacy and confidentiality as well as breach?
Well, because our IT folks are here, I want to make sure I'm correct in saying this, our administrative policy manual is online, and you can pretty much search any word, and it will direct you to whatever policies match that search. So if it's just a matter of search, that's taken care of.
Are there keywords, too?
Greg Potter.
All of the content from any policy is searchable through the Internet.
Okay.
Including this one. Once it's...
Okay.
Dooley Kiefer's next.
I came with a suggestion for the resolution, which I hadn't gotten to yet. I spoke with our legislative clerk about the best way to make the title clearer, and she suggested simply using something parenthetical after what's there already. So what I'd like to propose is adopting policy 11-47, comma, breach incident response, parenthesis, detailing Tompkins County's response, protocols, to any possible violation of the confidentiality or security of a person's private personal information, end parentheses. And I read that very quickly to ITS staff before the meeting, and they thought that it didn't mislead anyone. So that's what I am proposing adding to the title of the resolution.
So you're moving an amendment to the title of the resolution with that parentheses that you just read.
That's right.
Is there a second for that?
Well, I'll second it for purposes
Seconded
of discussion.
Carol Trock, discussion. Dooley, you want to speak to it anymore? Ready to vote.
I found the term brief incident response to be not one in common parlance for ordinary residents. I think it's clearly understood by everyone in the business and, fortunately, finally by legislators. But I think it's good to have a title of a resolution clear to a member of the public, and that's why I put all that language up there in parentheses.
Are we ready to vote on the amendment as proposed by Dooley Kiefer? All those in favor of Dooley's amendment, adding the parentheses, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4. Those opposed? That would be the rest of us. That fails. We're back on the main motion. Are we ready to vote on that?
All those in favor of the motion, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's Dave, which way are you voting? You're opposed? Okay, then that's unanimous.
So we have a breach incident response policy. Thank you very much. Thank you, Karen.
But can you keep it? All right, where do we want to go next? Who else we got waiting out there?
We have the acceptable use policy.
I'm sorry, I got another policy. Oh, you got
J,
another
J
one?
J too. You may want to take J first. Might be faster, yeah.
You want to do what, Nathan?
We should take J first.
Oh, not, you don't mean resolution J. You mean that J. Gotcha.
And, so it will be, where is it? Oh, it got pulled off consent.
G got pulled.
Which one?
Resolution G.
G, yes. So I would like to take resolution G. And I'll move resolution G.
That's the adoption of regular and supplemental reports of footings, totals, and assessment rules. Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. Who pulled that one? Carol?
Yeah, thank you. I just had a question that I talked a little bit with both Rick and Jay before the meeting, but I just wanted to make sure I understood the columns on page 14. The report of the Committee on Footings, which I assume is Jay, it seems way out of proportion to me that the wholly exempt property, I was looking at the city of Ithaca first, for most of our towns, the amount of wholly exempt property seems to be a subset of column 3, which is the full value of real property, including buildings. For the city of Ithaca, you've got a $2.4 billion value on a full of wholly exempt property on a full value of real property of $1.6 billion. And that doesn't make any sense to me, how the wholly exempt property could, as a subset, could be that much more.
Jay Franklin?
Yep. Column 3 is just row section 1, which are your typical taxable properties. So that's at about $1.65 billion. The overall value of the city of Ithaca is $4.174 billion. And out of that, $2.47 billion is wholly exempt. You know, the vast majority, $2.2 billion of that being Cornell University. So, yeah, about, you know, more than 50%, 60, 65% of the city of Ithaca is wholly exempt from taxes.
Well, it certainly puts numbers behind the concern that those from the city and in city government raise about why they can't cover their expenses and why the potholes are there that we drive over every day. So thank you. That is astounding.
Okay, are we ready to vote? All those in favor of Resolution G, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Can we take the go to H?
All right. I have Resolution H, subdivision map filing certification requirement pursuant to Section 503.7 of the Real Property Tax Law.
I asked for that to be pulled, basically because I know this is a re-reversal of a policy that we had before. I think, Jay, you mentioned to me earlier that it was changed in, what, 2001? Do you want to speak
Correct.
To this, please?
Yeah. Back in 2001, we enacted this prior to the county clerk's electronic document imaging system so that we'd be notified of all subdivision maps that are filed at their office. Prior to their electronic database, we would just get a paper copy. Sometimes we would get it, sometimes we wouldn't. But anything that's filed at the county clerk's office, we have to put on the assessment roll. So once we were able to get access to all of their images, we felt we didn't need this resolution anymore. Now, in at the request of a few local municipalities, we're bringing it back. We found that there's been a lot of illegal subdivisions. I don't like illegal, but I would say more unapproved subdivisions that have been filed at the county clerk's office. Once it's filed at their office, we put it on the assessment roll, notify the towns, and then they spend a good deal of time and effort trying to undo what was filed. You know, I was just talking to Brent Cross from the village of Cuga Heights about a subdivision that was filed in 2009, and we're still dealing with it, of trying to undo it. It went through countless years of foreclosure, you know, and I think the final bill was a $40,000 bill that they had to pay those back taxes. So we're bringing it again as a hope or as a means to try to stop these unapproved subdivisions from happening. Ideally, the property owner would come, or whoever's filing it would come right to our office. We would work with each local municipality to see what sort of approval or non-approval is needed. A quick stamp and a filing can occur at the county clerk's office.
If I could speak, and I got to have my own prejudices here, and remember that when we're talking about subdivisions, we aren't always talking about giant health department approved multiple lot subdivisions. Sometimes we're talking about a single split, one lot into two, and sometimes it's difficult to timing-wise to know it has to go to a different agency before you can file a document with the county clerk's office. So that's where I'm a little concerned here, that it may make things more difficult for people who've already gone to the town to talk with them and got the map stamped, and then have to go through one more procedure. That's my only reason for dropping this and saying that I'm a little concerned about it, but that's me. Dooley?
I'm looking at packet page 16, line, the whereas that begins on line 9, and I think there may be a word missing in line 10. It talks about problems raised by not having subdivision maps complete and all details included, something before filing. It just feels like there's a word missing. So that's a suggestion for clarity.
Okay.
Is something missing? Raised by not having.
Do you have the line numbers on your copy?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say really what it needs, because some maps that are taking one parcel into two need approval. Some need a signature saying that it doesn't need approval, and some need nothing.
What does all details refer to? All details taken care of?
How about with all details?
Necessary details. Yeah, that'd be fine. It just felt funny.
Kathy?
I'm assuming we're talking about the maps, or are we talking about details on the forms? Because we're talking about the maps, with all details would do it, or, as Dooley says, with all necessary details could probably cover all of it. I'd go with it. It does sound funny. Everybody else is asleep, so it doesn't really matter.
Is that friendly? Yes.
Very friendly.
All right.
What are we taking with
it? Can you restate, Billy?
Pardon me?
Can you restate what you want?
Concern about the problems raised by not having subdivision maps complete and all details taken care of before filing, and all details included, addressed, some, that's a good verb.
Yeah.
OK.
Okay, we okay with that? Mover and seconder?
We're using the word address. Sure.
You want to move this ahead? You want to vote? All right, all those in favor of this as amended, please raise your hand. Those opposed? One opposed. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
We haven't had our break, but is there somebody else we need to get through here? Who's waiting for what?
I think the rest of the crew is waiting on the acceptable use of county information technology resources.
Ooh, that's going to be a long one. Do you want to?
It's going to be a long one.
No, it's not.
Do we want to take a break?
So can we take 10 minutes? Let's be back at 5
o'clock. Yes, okay.
Nathan, you want to go to resolution Q and R, I guess?
I will move resolution Q, which is adopting policy 0701, acceptable use of county information technology resources.
Seconded by Dave McKenna. Let's open this up to discussion.
Yeah,
so
there
we pushed over last time.
Yeah.
Nathan?
Well, let me start off the discussion by talking about the two main points of contention within this resolution. The first was the one that was discussed here on the floor of the legislature about email. And the second is on page 51 about special requests for access to or monitoring of another user's ITS accounts. So those are the two things that I want to talk about. The first thing is the email. And so you'll recall that the language before said, when conducting county-related business via email, officers or employees and other authorized users must use email system or systems provided by or approved via written authorization by the county administrator and the director of ITS. And so we decided to add some clarity into that and you can see that here is the underlined language. When conducting county-related business via email, officers or employees and other authorized users must use email systems provided by the county or approved via written authorization by the county administrator and the director of ITS that shall require a commitment by the user to transfer to the county email system all emails that deal with county business. And so, and that could be accomplished two significant ways. Number one is, of course, when there's a FOIL request to submit, to go through your whatever account that you might have, whether it's Gmail or Hotmail, whatever, and then submit forward on those emails to fill that request. But actually, what we want to do as part of the training associated with this is that in order for the county administrator and the director of ITS to approve your use of a outside of the county email system email is that you have to commit to CCing your county email address in your responses to your email. So in other words, if Dan Klein gets an email to danklein@aol.com, I don't know what your email address is. Hotmail. All right. danklein@hotmail.com. Dan, you could still receive that email on Hotmail, but the county administrator and the director of ITS are going to ask you, in order to do that, in order for that to be okay, you have to cc decline@tompkins.co.org on your response. So that way that message is going on a county email server, and it's now a record that could then be foilable in the future. And if you did that with all of your email responses, then that means you wouldn't have to do when there were FOIL responses, that should cover, a FOIL request, that should cover all of it because your correspondence will have been recorded in the email server. So that is the compromise that we've decided to make on this email question. So so maybe we could talk about that one first and then I could talk about the second piece.
Okay. Do you want to talk about this issue with emails? Nathan is inviting us to do that. Go ahead, Will. Then Jim.
So Nathan,
Carol?
We CC, if we want use that approach and use CC the response, what if the inquiry was sent to that address?
Right. So if the your personal or?
Yes, to the personal.
Right. So if it's sent to your personal, then we would be assuming that you would be, if you're replying, that you're just replying with that.
So, for example, sometimes we all get mass emails that are sent to everybody. And I don't always, we don't always each individually reply to all those. Is it necessary for us to do anything with that?
Perhaps. Let's see. I don't know. I mean, I would defer to Joe and Greg on that.
I'll go first, but Greg will probably have the right answer. I think anything that's considered a public record should be put into the county email system. And the best way to do that is through this CC. And then what we had talked about at committee is, since there is not universal knowledge about what a public record is, there would be some training provided to help people understand what is a public record and what would have to find its way into the county's email system. Again, what we talked about is during your time in the legislature, being able to access your personal accounts, your Gmail accounts, you would certainly open those up if there was ever a FOIL or anything like that. However, after you leave government service, it's harder to access those records. So this is a way to make sure that that record is preserved in the county system.
Yeah. Carol?
Well, first of all, thank you for taking the whole thing back and trying to answer some of these questions, because they weren't quite as simple as we thought they were at first glance. And on this particular point, I'm curious, are you looking for us to set up an automatic CC to anything we respond to that came through a county address?
It'd be very hard to do that, right? Because you would have to... Yeah. No, it would be hard because, you know, just because it has the word county doesn't mean necessarily... Something that's, you know, somebody could say, hey, don't you live in, you know, your mom can send you an email about living, how things are going in the county, and now that's a public record, right? So it's just, so you really have to use your discretion, which is why that training that Joe is talking about is really important, so that you know what it is to get the public record. But CCs are really easy, right? I mean, it's literally just adding another address in the address book.
Well, I find it easier if I have an auto CC and then
and you
remove
know what, Carol,
people.
I think if you want to do that, that's fine.
No, but I'm just wondering, not everybody, it may be possible that not everybody knows how in their particular mail system to set up an auto CC. So it just, again, it's something to add to the training list.
Okay. I think Ray could do that.
I'm afraid I lost track. Who did I have after Carol? If your hands, if you want to speak, please raise your hands. Let me get Peter, then Martha.
So let me get this straight now. I get real nasty emails from constituents. I suppose we all do. And what do I do? Sometimes I do nothing. Mostly, that's what I do is nothing. Now, does that mean I've got to? And they send it to my email address, my Cornell email address, because that's the only email I have. Now, if I do nothing, does that mean I have to immediately send it to Joe and say...
No, well, you would, no, if you do nothing, you could forward it to your county, pstein@tompkins-co.org, if you think it's a matter of public record, right?
Well, is an attack on me a matter of public record or not?
Well, that's for us, that's why we're going to have a training to determine that, yeah. Yeah, that's all.
Martha? Go ahead, Greg.
I just wanted to interject that what constitutes public record, and Nathan's already on track here, is going to be covered in the training that we talked about providing to any legislators. That is determined by the CO2 schedule by the New York State Archives for records retention and storage. So what you may receive something in your county account that is not a public record. Or you might receive something that is, that Peter Stein has mentioned, that he doesn't respond to. Yes, in that case, that is a public record that would have to be forwarded to a county account for safekeeping for the long run.
May I ask a question, Greg? What if it's one of those, like, mass emails that goes to all of us, and a few of us have a county email, but some of us have private emails, right? It's still on the county email system and still foilable, right? So then we wouldn't have to forward it again to our... county email,
that's
right?
That's correct. If it's covered under one of the accounts, then and in theory we have it in our archiving
right.
system.
So there we go. So then in that case, when we do get those mass emails, then we don't have to forward it on because there's already a few of us that are getting it recorded on the email system.
Martha?
But if you do respond, that's a unique response, and so that you should copy to your Tompkins address. Okay. Greg, you know, at the beginning of this year or so, I had there were changes in group wise, and it became much more, oh, the polite word would be clunky on my phone. And so just, you know, if there's anything you can do to make it unclunky or less clunky, because that's like, if you want us to do this,
right? I agree.
I understand. It's just that we have to deal with each person individually around as we do employees, because everyone has a different type of phone. There's a different application that may be associated with their phone. We can work with you during the training session or one-on-one if you prefer to help you through that technical hurdle.
I believe that change happened on December 6, 2012.
Who's counting? Jim.
A couple of dumb guy questions. Number one, I have a Gmail account, and what do I have to do so that I don't get put in FOIL prison, for example, if I don't want to come to the county email system? How can you, what do I need to do so you can access all the nasty emails I get and things like that?
First off, it's FOIL or e-discovery, because there's a legal side to this. I mean, we could get requests of records that include email responses or correspondences years from now. We would have to respond to them based on if we still retain those records.
Okay.
So it could be outside of that FOIL request, or you could get hit with the FOIL request. We would set up, in your case, an individual account under your name within the county as an email account, and then ask that you forward to that account or covering copy or CC into that account all of your correspondences or your responses to email if you choose not to use the county-provided system.
Okay. And the next simplest thing would be to have a county email account, but I could also receive county email on a Gmail account.
That's correct. We can do, you can set up that account in the county account to automatically forward to a Gmail account, which some people do.
Thank you.
Leslie?
I think you just answered my question, Greg, because that's what I had before. I don't even know if it still existed. As if I get written to my county address, it's forwarded to my other address that I can then, this is usually what I'm checking. So that still exists as an option.
Yes, it does.
Thank you.
I'd like to make a point here, and that is that I think we're all very much want things to be in the open. We want them to be transparent. We are representatives, and we take these matters very seriously. We furnish, for the most part, our own electronic devices, our own computers. The county does not furnish computers for legislators, with the exception of the chair's computer that's in the office here at Chambers. And that's an investment that we have, not only in the hardware and software to run the equipment, but also in the internet access fees that we have to pay every month to Time Warner or whatever other provider that we use. And I think that needs to be taken into account here. And when I read things in the newspaper that say, well, there's a loophole, we aren't looking for loopholes. We're looking to do the right thing. But I think it needs to be understood that we're making a real effort here to make communication by the public and the members of this legislature easier through the use of email. Some of us don't like email a whole lot, but we use it because that's the trend today, and we're doing our best with this. So I certainly appreciate the efforts out of your committee, Nathan, and the help that we're getting from our IT department and administration on this. But I also want people to know out there, we're not trying to hide anything. We're trying to comply, but and do it in a way that works for everybody that has a different kind of a computer or smartphone or iPad or whatever they use to communicate with. Anyone else?
And Mike, I was just going to say that, you know, and that's an important thing to recognize, is that when it's easy to comply, you're going to have better compliance than if it's hard to comply.
Exactly.
And so having this policy be a little more flexible, I think, will actually mean that we're in better compliance with the actual laws.
Carol?
Yeah, no, as the person who asked that this get delayed by 2 or 3 weeks, my intent on doing that was to make sure that as soon as the policy went into effect, I was going to have everything I needed in place to be sure that I was complying and not saying, oh, well, I'll comply later, because that, later can slip. Having done this, I just want to thank Greg, your staff today. Lauren Cottrell was quite helpful in helping me try to work through the best way to forward my county email to a place that I regularly read, and in addition be able to get into it where when I have the time to go on to that account specifically. And I think there are still some kinks to work out so that I'm not getting duplicates or triplicates, and the best way for people to do that. For those of you who haven't tried to do this yet, and again, we can always go into our county system and get them. It's the question is, do we want to, while we're on the road or ease of use, have them also be available to us in the email account that we most frequently refer to, and then have the answers come back from the county email account. And that was a little trickier. I spent a few hours today setting it up. So people should, I do recommend that you set up a training fairly soon and that people attend it, or if they can't attend it, to find a way, actually for future legislators or crib sheets to refer to in the future about the options. So I appreciate it, and I certainly support this now, having made
anything else? Are we ready to vote on resolution Q?
Well, so then there's the second part.
You want to talk about that?
I would like to talk about that. I would like to talk about it.
All right, go ahead.
So I want to direct you to package page 51, and you'll see F, and you'll see special requests for access to or monitoring of another user's ITS accounts. And it passed with the following changes took place. In the main one, I'll just get straight to the change. So before it said the employer or authorized user assigned to the accounts accounts may not be notified of such requests for access or monitoring of the outcome of such requests. So in other words, if we do an investigation on you about your internet use, we may, or your email, we may not tell you that we did it. That's what it is said before. The committee then said that no, you will be notified after the investigation is complete. Right? So if there is an investigation, you will be notified. I would like to I move the resolution. I can amend a resolution I moved, right? I can do that, right?
It's certainly friendly to yourself.
It was certainly friendly to myself, I know.
What are you proposing to do?
Well, I would like to do is actually return it to the original language, which is that the employee or authorized user assigned to the accounts may not be notified of such requests for access or monitoring and of the outcome of such requests. And I will tell you, I'll say why.
Dave, is that friendly to you?
No, I don't agree with that.
Yeah, he doesn't agree with that. He voted against what I just said. So.
All right, then you're going to have to move it as an amendment then.
All right, well, I'd like to move that as an amendment then.
All right, restate, please.
All right, so it would go back to the language that the employee or authorized user assigned to the accounts may not be notified of such requests for access or monitoring or of the outcome of such requests.
And that's a second by Jim?
It is.
And this is the reason why, is that, so right now, so the committee members, a couple of the committee members that voted for this, they could say what their position was. I was opposed to that idea because in the world of IT, you are constantly monitoring and investigating the proper use of internet services. A lot of those investigations are actually built into the software that exists. And so I think that it is it would be onerous for the staff to continuously update people saying that, hey, we looked into your email usage or your internet usage and you were A-okay. Right? That's the first thing. It's administratively onerous and not helpful. Secondly, is that I think this is a real management problem because there are times when, as a manager, you do need to monitor how your staff are using the internet. And I think that And sometimes you do it for very, very good reasons. Hopefully you're doing it for good reasons, but sometimes you need to do it for reasons in which you want to understand how efficient your staff is, whether or not how well they're using their time, et cetera. And I think that it poses a management problem, because when people find out about these investigations that were done, when you were simply trying to look at efficiency, people are going to go to the worst case scenario and say, well, you were invading my privacy, right, on the use of my internet. And I think that really poses a management issue, and that's why I don't support notifying people of every single one of the investigations that we might have into their internet use. I think investigation into your internet use, right, especially when you're using county resources, should be something that is done on a regular basis, and we don't have to tell people every single time it happens. But that's what this change makes us do.
Other discussion? Dooley? On the amendment.
I think Nate left out the fact that the policy that exists now says that employees will be notified, so that this new policy is a change. If I remember the old policy, it said that we would be notified. There seems to be a distinction needed between routine monitoring of all employees in your department or work group and singling out an employee because someone has said, I think this person is doing something he's not supposed to do, or you suspect directly that something strange is going on. And if there's a way to distinguish between the routine monitoring that you're talking about and the special investigations, then that would be a useful thing to add. And I don't know how to do that. I don't have any language, but I heard what you just said. But mainly it's the idea that at the moment we will be notified, and this says you may not be notified. And that seems too extreme in that direction.
Jim, then Peter.
Greg, you're here.
Sorry, I missed Martha. She was on the list first.
Oh, sorry.
Martha, Jim, Peter.
I don't think saying may not be notified means will not be notified.
It can be read either way. You need better language.
Okay. So my question, I guess I was looking at Greg, and I know you, there's internet usage and there's email. Is this about both of those?
And voice.
Includes telephone applications as well as all software applications that are owned or leased or hosted by Tompkins County. So the reason this paragraph is in there in particular is to differentiate between the new old policy and new policy. So we wanted to specifically tell our users of the systems that we're changing our policy and our procedures, and that there's no expectation of privacy. So if you do change this to will be notified, then you have to really look at the start of the policy all the way through, because there is a no privacy expectation at the very front of this policy. You're stating that to moving the other direction now of the exception of dealing with privacy that is contradiction to the initial purpose and statement of this policy.
No expectation. But you're saying that anybody working in county systems should not expect that it's the same as your...
Last paragraph of the introduction.
Okay. All right. So it's not just are you shopping, online on county time, but it's all the systems. Okay. So what is your sense of this? Are you saying, Greg, that you... Nate's amendment would undo the amendment, right? Okay. Are you supporting that?
I'm supporting the original version of the language,
the original
first and foremost,
which I am reverting it back to.
Got it.
Jim?
That was my question.
Peter?
I may have lost the thread of the conversation, but I was sitting and thinking, I've only had one email address in my whole life. I've had it for 30 years. It's PCS1 at Cornell. And I have been often told by Cornell that Cornell does not look into my email They treat my emails as being completely private, except when, I mean, it's a little bit like going to a judge to get a search warrant, that they have to make a case that there's a reason for someone to go into my email, that there's a suspicion that's backed up by evidence for do it, but they can't just go into my email and look at it. And I sort of assumed that that was the case for all email systems. Or if it isn't, I wonder why not. I mean, it's a serious infringement on a person's privacy, it seems to me, to have an expectation that any time the county wants to, they'll go and read your email.
But this
I find that discomforting.
But this is on your county email conducting county business, Peter, right? For Cornell, right? Cornell, your academic liberty is part of your being a professor. That's why you even have tenure, right?
No, it is.
Students use their Cornell email addresses for private personal reasons, right? And they're established as private email addresses. So it's very different. I don't think you can compare the two.
Well, I don't really think it's different because I'm a professor, but there's 30,000 people at Cornell that have email addresses, and most of them are not professors. I mean, they're electricians and students and all sorts of things.
So does Cornell, Peter, tell you that every time there's a request about this, that they're going to notify you that there was a request made?
I've been told that people at Cornell have an expectation of privacy in their email. Okay. Maybe, you know, I haven't asked the question for a long time. Maybe things have changed.
Carol Chalk, then Martha, then Dave.
Is there a way to distinguish oversight of IT services from specific instances where and the kind of routine oversight that Dooley was talking about from special situations? This whole section refers to special requests for access to or monitoring of another user's ITS accounts. And it's my understanding that whether you're at Cornell, and Peter, this did come up during my time at Cornell as we were setting up new accounts and forwarding to on-the-road devices as well, and it became very apparent then, and working with the IT staff here, they do routinely look at emails to make sure that their system is functioning okay and that there isn't, for example, too much spam going to your account. So that any IT administrator has the ability in any system to go into all of your emails. You know, as I was setting this up, our IT person was mirroring what I was doing, and they can do that, and I didn't know that they had started doing it. But you know, that's sort of a part of needing to set up the system. So as I read this section, F, we're not making this distinction between these two things, and what this applies to are special requests where there's some reason that you need to be looking at a particular employee. And in that case, there may be a reason not to be alerting that employee to the fact that you're looking, but I don't know how I feel about after the fact having to tell the employee that yes, we did need to look at you.
The problem from a management perspective is that if there's a perception that your employee is using inappropriately the internet or email, whatever the system might be, and you have to notify them after the fact, and if they are not, then you have to tell them, well, I looked into your use of the system and you're doing everything okay. So just forget I ever did anything, and I didn't look at your system and your use of the system. I read every single email that was ever written to you in the past month, but you're okay. You're all right. So that step, that extra burden, is really complicated from a management perspective in the county government, as well as it's going to be a personnel nightmare, because most of these special requests come through the personnel department.
So but do we have anything in here that is routine requests or routine access to and monitoring of ITS accounts section here?
We do in the other sections of policy, but we take the different direction that there is no expectation of privacy, and we alert the users that we do regular monitoring of the systems, whether it's telephone, email, voicemail, or telephone use, or the audit of of software that we support.
So we are telling people in here, if you point us to where, we're telling people that all of your use may be monitored.
It's in the general section.
We've been on this
general information
for 30 minutes. I have Martha, Dave, then Nathan again.
I mean, county employees, including elected officials, should be on notice that when they're planning a bank robbery, do it on something else besides the county resources. That's the point. Peter, this critical distinction is that this is a public, we're a government. Cornell is a private institution. You know, Cuga Medical Center, Ithaca Neighborhood Housing, Bishops, Agway, whatever, they have their own systems, and they're not accountable to the public in the same way that we are. So I think that's a critical difference.
Dave?
Yeah, I would just say that, my previous employers, your email was anything but private. It was company property, okay? And I wouldn't expect it to be anything less than that, especially in a county where you're accountable to the public as a whole. So from that perspective, I think Cornell may have a unique system, but when I was on it, they didn't tell me anything about that. So anyway, I still wish there was a way, and I can start to see the logic of your argument from a management perspective, but it seems like when there is a special investigation, there ought to be a special way to handle that. So that, I guess, maybe what I'm really thinking about is more in tune with somebody publicly accuses somebody of something, and you do your investigation, and then come back and let them know the results.
Nathan?
Not an everyday case.
I thought you were done.
Nathan?
I also want to say that this is, if employees know that every investigation, I mean, I'm sorry, if managers know that every investigation they request will end up notifying that staff person, it greatly diminishes the chances that they will use this policy to make sure, for example, that there weren't breaches into patient health information. Let's say, for example, you have a nurse who is a fantastic practitioner and a fantastic employee, but you heard that they were looking into the files of a well-known person in Tompkins County. So they're not necessarily a bad person, but they are definitely breaching the Health Information Privacy Act, and that is a major offense. Right? So you need to do that. But as a manager, sometimes you'll say, well, gosh, they're such a good person, and if I do this and they ended up not doing it, then now they're never going to trust me again. And then they won't do it. And then we won't have an investigation over a really serious matter. And so that's why I think it's so important to revert to the original language.
Dan?
I'm wondering, so I'm reading this section that we're discussing, section F, and it says that the request would be submitted in writing to the director of ITS. So is there such a system now? Is there such a procedure now? And if so, like how often do you get those kind of requests, and what are their nature?
It is a procedure under the current policy. We probably get half a dozen a year, and there's a form that's filled out, submitted to me in writing to request access to or review of. The use of an email, internet usage is most common.
And are they, would you characterize them as the supervisor thinks something is going wrong?
They're mostly related to other supervisory issues. So, everything is monitored on a regular basis, all the systems. We do telephone reports, we do internet use account reports, we filter, and we do email, statistics and archiving because we have to for management of the software. And we do software audit reports as well. But those are special requests that come through. I would, characterize as those, and that's why we use the special request category for this, so it's different than day-to-day monitoring. Okay. This is an investigation. This is a different type of request, and that was the intent.
Dooley, remember around the amendment. Then I have Martha.
I think I still disagree with Nate's amendment to return it to the original, even though that's what Greg loves best. I did not get a clear sense from your discussions with the other legislators about whether there are routine requests from all departments for monitoring particular employees, or is it what you just said now, maybe a half a dozen a year?
It's different. For telephone usage, which we lumped into the same classification as internet and email and software, they do receive monthly reports, all of the departments, particularly those locations that have multiple departments coming off phone switch. In a case of like the public health department, we have one bill that's sent directly to them, and then they can associate the use or the cost of those phone calls with the division level. But we do it by department level for combined locations. So it's already happening in telephone. So if this passes, as it's worded now, I'd have to request every department head to submit to me in writing a request to monitor or provide information about telephone usage.
So that makes it feel as though there should be a distinction among these different devices and what requires written requests and what doesn't. And if this special request is really not utilized very often and it's only for individual employees who are suspected of something, then this doesn't seem that burdensome for you to notify a person after the fact.
It's not me who's notifying them. It's personnel or it's the supervisor of the employee.
That's who does it now.
That's who's supposed to do it now, yes.
Okay, Martha, on the amendment.
I think we could do better in this than it is written, or to go back to the original. There's something in between, and I don't know what it should be.
I have a slight change in what would be going back to the original. If it said the employee or authorized user assigned to the accounts may or may not be notified of such requests for monitoring, et cetera, et cetera, or of the outcome of such requests. So that. Okay.
I'm sorry, are you accepting that as a friendly change to the proposed amendment?
So that reverts to the original, except that you say may or may not. And I am convinced that this is really important to do. I agree with you, Nate, Jim, and Greg. I think that, we have competing sort of expectations. We as a general matter, value privacy. So we feel strongly about, you know, we don't want people looking over our shoulders and reading our emails and our phones and, what, you know, phone conversations. We also have the very important value of transparency and accountability to the public. So that, you know, but as employees, and we are employees too, as employees we are accountable to the public, and that paragraph in the intro makes it clear that, in a sense, that as an employee using a county system, that's the guiding value. Privacy takes a back seat to accountability in this situation. And I think they've explained a bunch of really good reasons that that's true. So this has nothing to do with people's private lives, because they shouldn't be carrying out private business with county facilities. If they are, then that's actually a problem that should be corrected.
I have, on the amendment, Mike Sigler, then Kathy Luz Herrera, then may we please vote.
I'll pass, Mike.
You're passing?
Yes.
Kathy?
Just briefly, although I found this a little problematic after the discussion, here's what comes to my mind, and okay, y'all can think about me whatever you want. I'm an employer, and somebody, a supervisor comes to me and says, you know, so-and-so isn't being as productive, I don't know what it is, and I ask my IT guy, and they go, wow, there's a whole lot of bandwidth being used up, and they can look at it because we've implemented the policy as proposed, and they find out that this person is watching streaming movies all day, or worse, streaming porn all day. Is this something of a public matter that should be looked into? Yes. Is this something that there might be some concerns for the county's liability? Yes. let's say that the folks were looking into private information of a graphic nature through DSS or something like that. That's important, too. These things are like, nobody wants to talk about it, but this is stuff that we do as government, and we have to, as Martha and many others have said, we have to be accountable. Where I have a little bit of trouble is, for some people, they can't use, maybe they don't have a smartphone or some other private way of their kids contacting them or something like that. In that case, they're going to have to use the county email for private purposes. They're allowed to do that under this, aren't they? It's only if they're giving minimal death threats to somebody that you know, Greg might say, hey, you're over the line. Am I being crazy, or is I'm sure you've thought of all this stuff.
We don't filter through all 800 email accounts looking for private use, if the answer to your question is that. We see the reports that are distributed on telephone stuff, so we're a little bit more specific. But in there, we give the exception that limited use of phones for local calls is okay. If there's a cost to it, they should be repaying the county based on the supervisor's review. But there's a cost associated with email, there's a cost associated with internet use, and there's a cost associated with software too, like there was with phones.
So if I can just go a little further with this, the kind of things that would catch the attention of a supervisor that could bring it to you under the revision that's being proposed would be excessive bandwidth or a personnel problem or a concern that they might be using the internet inappropriately.
Or too often, too much.
Okay. For me, you know, much as I have concerns about personal liberties, it's county owned, and I think these are appropriate. As distasteful as it is, I think it's necessary. So I'll be supporting the amended version, which I think is what we're talking about, right? Which is Nate's amendment to move it back.
We're going to move to a vote. And Nathan, will you restate now what you are proposing?
Yeah. So the last sentence under F will now say, the employee or authorized user assigned to the accounts may or may not be notified of such requests for access or monitoring of the outcome of such requests.
All right. On the amendment.
Or of the outcome.
Or of the outcome of such requests. I was like, well, I'm missing this.
Yes. On the amendment, all those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Those opposed? Should be 3. 1, 2. I missed somebody. Those in favor, please.
Aye.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. And 2 opposed. The amendment passes. Back on the main motion.
Those were the major issues in the policy, and so I have nothing else to speak of about, I mean.
So let's see if we can vote on resolution Q, acceptable use of county information technology resources as we just amended it.
Hold on just a second. I'm looking at R for some reason. Although I have the right page for the other things. Tell me what page.
Martha?
Here, nope.
I just want to know why Greg thought we couldn't do this before the recess.
Gee, I didn't think it would take any time.
Oh, man, look, the time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah. Moving right along. So on cue, all those in favor, please raise your hand.
Read the title again? I'm sorry, it's resolution Q,
adopting policy 07-01, acceptable use of county information technology resources as we just amended it. All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Those opposed? 1.
I'd like the record to show that I believe we need this policy, but I think an employee's right to know of an individual investigation is just as important. And that's why I'm voting no. It's that one change that Nate carried.
Nathan, let's continue with R, if you would, please.
Oh, yes. All right. Now I have to. R. All right. and I can speak to this right after we move it. Deletion of Administrative Policy 0718, Use of County Communication Systems, and deletion of Administrative Policy 0738, Software.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna.
And you'll recall that because we didn't pass the policy we just passed, we needed to reinstate these policies, and so now we're deleting them now that we just passed the one that we just passed.
Are we ready to vote?
Whatever you just said.
All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Okay. Is there anybody else waiting for anything, or we're going to go back to the top of the agenda? It's 20 minutes of 9, folks, so let's be brief and crisp. Let's go to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Kathy Luz Herrera, Chair.
I have no report.
No report. I think you have a resolution and N.
Don't you
want to
okay.
move in, Kathy?
You got to tell me what page it's on. That's all right. I had it here, but...
It's a budget adjustment and appropriation of unspent funds from the 2013 and prior years.
Yes.
The various accounts of the departments.
And the page number
and report
is...
to the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Packet page 26.
Is it possible to get...
Hold it aside at the beginning. What? Here we go. Okay, I'm going to move what he just said. And what it's about is for Weights and Measures, they have a 5-year-old non-supported laptop computer. I'm assuming it's running XP or something, and software. And I think this is a valid use of a budget adjustment, and so I move it.
I will second it.
Okay, Peter?
I was seconding.
Oh, I'm sorry. Peter seconds it.
All right, Peter.
Dooley?
Yep. I am looking at packet page 28, which is the explanation of the sources of the funds to be used. And under savings resulting from new efficiencies, it says savings due to the price going down for most of the year. What is he talking about? Price of what?
I think we're talking about the price of the computer.
That's what he's buying.
Yes.
So that isn't how he saved money. I just don't
see what you're saying. You know what? I don't know what it means.
Vote against it.
Maybe we can hear from Joe who can tell us.
Well, I think it's just Don saying that he was able to achieve some savings in his line items. Last year, his non-personal line. So he's saying prices went down last year. He enjoyed that, so that's how he saved the money.
He's not talking about gas.
Well, he might be. I think it's just a generic statement that.
Well, it says
he's enjoyed some savings.
What you said is what he says under the at the bottom. That's other. Anyway, I guess it would be nice to see these filled out a little more completely. I'm not going to vote against it. Don't worry.
Great. Thanks.
We're ready to vote. All those in favor, please raise your... We need a short-form roll call, please.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Any noes? That's unanimous. Okay. Let's go to Economic Development Committee. Will Burbank, Chair.
So the Economic Development Committee has not met since our last meeting, and we will not be meeting this month, but we will be having that great tour that I've told you about. It's a week from Friday, the 12th, from 2 to 4. And if you haven't responded to Heather Filberto, please do so. We'll try to send out a reminder. And that concludes my report.
Questions? Let's go to Government Operations again. Nathan?
Yes, I would like to move a resolution... P, budget adjustment and appropriation of unspent funds from 2013 and prior years to various accounts of departments and report to the Government Operations Committee.
Is there a second? Seconded by Peter Stein. Discussion? Ready to vote? All those in favor? Oh, again, short. Good thing she's here to remind me. Short form roll call.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Any noes? That's unanimous. Anything else you want to say about your committee?
Dooley wanted us to talk more about the blue slips and the matter of talking about personal matters, and so we did not have time to do that during this meeting. So I will have that discussion in the next meeting.
It was on the agenda. It wasn't just that I wanted.
Oh yes, sorry. Yes, it was on the agenda, but it was your what you requested for it to be on the agenda, and we just didn't have time to.
Any questions for Nathan? Old Library Committee. We have now scheduled our next. I'm sorry.
I had a question for Nathan.
Go ahead, Carol.
So, will a training session be scheduled?
About
the email?
If you can update the committee and the legislature on that overall.
It'll be by Greg and Maureen Reynolds. They'll provide the training.
Okay. Thank you.
The Old Library Committee, we have now scheduled our next meeting, which will be a review of the public responses and private responses we received to be able to make some recommendations for the final RFP. And to talk about those responders again to the RFEI. I forgot when we scheduled that.
September 25th.
It's going to be September 25th at 9 o'clock in the morning. I also have a bit of news to let you know that both Ed Marks and I received letters from Tim Colbert of Integrated Acquisitions, and that group has now withdrawn from the process of the RFEI. So that leaves just four responders to the RFEI that we'll be talking about. Carol Chalk.
Wait, did you say that the committee is going to meet on the 25th?
25th.
Yes.
Yep.
That is the Jewish holiday of Rosh Hashanah.
At night, right? No, it's on the 25th.
It's in the morning, right?
Yeah. The holiday starts at sundown the night before and goes through that day.
Well, we've been struggling trying to find a date.
Yeah, I understand that. It's like setting a meeting for Christmas.
We can take a look at dates. Thank you, Carol.
Whether I intend to come or not.
No, thank you for bringing it to our attention. You're very right. We didn't take that into consideration, and we will look at a different date. I think that's
okay.
Very important.
And whether I intend to come or not, I think that
I
there are, just so other people understand, that there are
right.
Many people who like to attend these meetings, and I assume that some of them.
Carol, we clearly understand. Thank you.
All right, let's move on.
So, Mike, if it's all right, could the committee just after this just check in quickly, see if we can find another date?
Happy to do that.
Thank you.
Carol, Planning Environmental Quality Committee?
Yes. We met on August 20th. Most of what we did you passed tonight, so thank you about that. The of interest to the legislature would be that the comprehensive plan schedule was handed out, and the dates that are relevant to the legislature, in addition to the committee, would be that on November 18th, you'll be asked to help schedule a public hearing on the comp plan, which will... the public hearing on the plan would occur on December 2nd, and then the plan itself would come to the legislature on December 16th. You'll have chances to see the copies, the drafts of the plan, starting as early as October 15th. The department has hired consultants, both for the feasibility study that's been talked about here of moving the DOT facility away from the waterfront, and for the energy roadmap to look at potentials for renewable energy from local sources, to develop scenarios, options that could ultimately meet our greenhouse gas emissions goals that are in the plan currently. The Sustainability Center, this is all from Ed Marks's report, the Sustainability Center has a new director. Her name is Spencer Haywood. At some point we might have the opportunity to meet her. And they will still be, since the county didn't need the facility that they're using, that they're occupying now, the back of the Human Services Building, they were going to be able to stay there, a couple of months, before they have to worry about moving. The committee is interested in addressing, and Ed is thinking about ways to, how to think about ways to mitigate traffic congestion in the west end of Ithaca and that intersection with Route 96, which is has been mentioned here as an issue. And then Solar Tompkins, we heard a report that, as of when we heard it, there were about 1,275 sign-ups by people who are, will at least have their homes evaluated for proceeding with solar panels on their roofs. And the Cleaner Greener program, TCOG, there's a contract with a consultant to create an energy efficiency rating system for buildings so that, like, you'd have a rating on something else, your house would be rated, and potentially at the point of sale, somebody would know what the rating is of the house they're buying and would have some way of evaluating what will be my utility costs if I buy this house. So that's very interesting. We heard a lot of other things, but I think those were the most relevant things that people might be interested in.
Questions for Carol? Thank you, Carol. Charter review, we meet on Wednesday, tomorrow, at 3 o'clock p.m., and we'll be taking up the Personnel Department and the Department of Planning. Any questions? Jim Dennis, Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Oh, there's Jim gone. All right, let's skip until he comes back. Let's go to, he's on the next one, too. So let's go to Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Leslie McBean Clairborn.
I can speak very slowly until he returns. The Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee does not have a report tonight. You will have a report at the next meeting. But pay attention to the reading and discussion group information that has come out, and hope that you will encourage people to sign up, if not yourselves, to participate. Thank you.
Questions for Leslie? Thanks, Leslie. Jim, Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, please.
Thank you, Mike. The first resolution, T, we already... I'm a bit confused why we have it still on here. We've already received a letter from Robert Megna about this resolution before it was ever passed, at least.
I'd be glad to speak to that.
Okay.
We actually received a letter from Senator Seward soliciting resolutions from localities.
Okay.
And I think that's how we're responding.
All right. Resolution T, requesting New York State revise the time period considered when computing savings associated with shared services efficiencies and reforms in the government efficiency plan required by the state's property tax freeze law, and I would move that.
Seconded by Martha. Discussion. Dooley?
I think it's a very well-written resolution, but I can suggest one change on the second page and line 8, It refers to the city of Cortland, and I think we should probably say in Cortland County to underline the fact that someone else is taking...
Okay, I'm good with that.
That's friendly to both? Okay. Ready to vote?
Wait.
Carol?
I think that this is a good resolution, too, as far as it goes. And I'm just wondering if it shouldn't be stronger. Because the more I think about this, I know we're all boiling about this.
I'll make a motion,
but
okay.
What matters in government is the existence of the efficiencies, not what year they were created. And in fact, the earlier they were created, the more your taxpayers have been, the longer your taxpayers have been saving money. So I just wonder, you know, we do resolve here that we request the state to move the look back date, but I would like to further resolve, that would be, you know, we'll settle for that, but I'd like to further resolve that New York State reward the existence of efficiencies in a manner that recognizes that longevity of shared services has been of greater benefit to taxpayers than more recent implementation of efficiencies.
Is there a second for that amendment to the resolution? Dooley Kiefer. Discussion on the proposed amendment.
Can you repeat it?
Okay. Be it further resolved that, as I'll say, Tompkins County urges New York State to reward the existence of efficiencies in a manner that recognizes that longevity of shared services has been of greater benefit to taxpayers than more recent. What did I say? More recent. I didn't finish the sentence here.
Innovation.
More recent implementation of shared services.
Discussion on the amendment. Martha?
I'll support it. I wish it were clearer, but I'm not going to bother to...
I mean, I'm happy that somebody else rewrite.
I'm not going to support it. I think these resolutions have been coming out of TCOG at their recommendation and also from the request from Senator Seward. And it really needs to be directed at this look-back period and to have that to go back further, so that our real property taxpayers can have advantage of these kinds of things. I'm not disagreeing with Carol's sentiment at all, but I don't see as we need to put this extra resolved in it. Other comments?
Well,
Carol?
Would you be happier with... this is asking pretty please, will you move the look-back date to 2000? And I'm saying, how about the same wording, be it further resolved, that the Tompkins County Legislature requests the state that it would be even more preferable to move the look-back date to the implementation of the shared service.
I understand.
Would that help if the wording were clearer that way?
Not for me.
Okay.
Okay, are we ready to vote on the amendment? All those in favor of the amendment that Carol read to us, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Those opposed should be 8. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That fails. Martha.
I have a question. If in the last resolve, the New York State Division of Budget, if does including a copy that goes to that division, would that go to Robert Magna by any chance?
I would certainly recommend that.
Perhaps
yes.
Could we specify to Robert Magna of the New York State Division of the Budget?
Is that friendly?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so happy that he was so quick with getting his letter out.
That's government efficiency. Yeah, I did.
Okay. Are we ready to vote on this, Dooley?
I wondered if there are any relevant state legislative committees or chair committees that should also be weighing in on this. I can't see the list in front of me, but I think there are some, and I would like staff to add them.
A local government.
Okay.
There's one in local government. There's a budget committee.
Of both houses.
And the rules committee. The rules committee is kind of the super committee.
Martha, you have your hand up?
Yeah, nothing additional.
Ready to vote on the main resolution then. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? I believe that's unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you. Reso U, ID 5009 budget adjustment and appropriation of unspent funds from 2013 and prior years to various accounts of the departments that report to the Budget and Capital Committee.
Is there a second?
And Dave? I would move that.
Dave seconds. Discussion? Dooley?
How many office chairs are we getting for $600?
I have no idea. How many, Joe?
I don't know.
Three or four, many. Maybe.
One really, really, really big one?
Yeah. Again, it would be fun to see these filled out a little more. Thank you.
We'll call tomorrow. We'll call the new personnel director. I'm sure she knows.
Let's call her now.
Ready to vote. All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
Short roll call.
There we go.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Help me here.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
And he knows. That's unanimous. Public, or anything else for Jim?
Just that, now that we have the budget, the first meeting of the EBC is September 10th, 5:30, right here.
And the EBC is, for the folks at home?
And a budget committee.
Thank you.
And that concludes my report.
Martha has a question.
Jim, the schedule that was handed out on our desk today, are those the same dates with that? Just a detail on presentations.
Yes.
Thank you.
Public Safety Committee. Jim stays with you as vice chair.
I will do that. Our leader is down south, and I frankly don't remember what happened at the last meeting. I may not have been there. But
would you be kind enough to move resolution?
Does anyone else remember who was there? Come on, Leslie.
I'm trying to remember myself. Yeah.
Well, at any rate, we'll
all the alternatives task force.
Oh, is that
that's
what it
true.
Was?
That's
oh, well,
true.
Yeah, right, right. I and was there for that. You just quickly forget when you're having fun.
Can you?
There's nothing
resolution
other than that. I have no report. We do have a public safety committee scheduled for Monday, September 8th. And there's one resolution on it. I will confer with the chair of the committee. It's my impression that we will not have a meeting on September 8th for only one resolution. Does that work for you, Kathy?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh.
So, or both, Kathy.
I would have said yes.
Yeah. And the resolution is accepting the 2014 report of jail alternatives, and I believe we could schedule a committee meeting prior to the next lunch meeting. So that concludes the public safety. Please,
Jim,
don't
I think there's a resolution V.
Yeah, and Reso V is a budget adjustment appropriation of unspent funds from 2013 prior years, various accounts of departments that report to the public safety committee, and I will move that.
Is there a second?
Second
by Leslin.
Assigned counsel and probation. Read them and weep.
Ready to vote? Short form. Julie has a question.
I don't have a question. I've been asking about these other forms. This one is filled out. I have no questions. It's so nice to see one filled out. Just
well, thank you for that comment. It could be the department head and the way they formally do these things. So, but
okay. Short form roll call, please.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
And he knows.
That concludes
my
report. Thank you.
Let's see. Health and Human Services Committee, Peter Stein, Chair.
We haven't had a meeting since the last report, and so I guess I have a resolution there. X-ray, right?
Yes.
So I'd like to move ID number 5000, budget adjustment and appropriation of unspent funds from 2013 and prior years to various accounts in the department that reports to Health and Human Service Committee. So I would move that.
Seconded by Kathy Lou Serrera. Ready to vote?
Yes.
Short form.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Any noes? Unanimous. Minutes of previous meeting, August 19th, 2014. Someone want to move those? Mike Sigler, is there a second? Seconded by Martha. Discussion. Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? One opposed. Two opposed. Sorry.
Two.
Kathy, were you for or against?
I was for.
Okay, one opposed. Any unfinished business? Motion to adjourn is in order. Jim Dennis.
I'm moved.
Seconded by Martha Robertson. All in favor? Opposed? Carried. Thank you all.
And
thanks
the whole
to the
library committee
and
folks.
Kathy Covert, Marcia. Thanks for our... Hello.